Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who, for the first time ever, will be operating all the podcast equipment using only my feet, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and we have a very big show for you guys today. It's a Clark cast. We're going to be speaking with the winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark, making her fifth recap appearance in the Five Timers Club here today. And then I'm going to be joined in studio by the tabulator, Kurt Clark, to get into your Survivor voicemails. And what an exciting episode of Survivor we had this past week with Jeremy getting voted off. Of course, Steven and I debated it. Oh, accidental bell. That's how you know it's going to be a hot show. Hot fire coming out. So it was a very fun show with Steven last night. We really got into the debate on the know-it-alls. And then I had a chance to speak with Jeremy myself this morning on the exit interview. So that was a lot of fun getting to talk to Jeremy. I really suggest you check out the exit interview with Jeremy on robhasawebsite.com. Of course, also available on the Rob Has a Podcast app. And for those of you guys who already have the Rob Has a Podcast app, make sure you update to the latest version, because that's going to affect the way that you get into the archive. So if you already have it and you realize that you can't get into the archives because we changed it in the newest version, just make sure you update to the latest release of the Rob Has a Podcast app. We're going to get Sophie on in just a minute, but I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. New sponsor on the podcast. And these are our friends at JibJab, JibJab.com, because it's the holidays and people are going to start sending out holiday cards. And that can be a real pain in the neck to do all the planning and stamps and writing. And if the cards, they could be very boring also. I hate when you get the boring Christmas cards and holiday cards. That's why this year I'm making hilarious e-cards through JibJab.com, because JibJab is the perfect way to make your cards stand out, and it's very easy. Now, a lot of people know JibJab. They do a lot of funny dancing Christmas things, and you can put your face on them. And we used one of the new e-cards, and it's very, very fun. And I've posted a special Thanksgiving message for all of the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast on our website at robhasawebsite.com/JibJab. You can go ahead and see our very special Thanksgiving message with lots of cameos for you guys at robhasawebsite.com/JibJab. So create and share personalized holiday greetings starring your friends and family or other people that you want to feature in your cards. You just make your card on JibJab from your computer, tablet, or phone in seconds. Just pick a card, upload a picture, type a greeting, and hit send. JibJab saves you money and hours of work. And they also give you an unlimited number of original, funny, and personalized cards for every occasion. Everybody loves getting a card from JibJab. You always want to see what people did on it. So go make yours right now. You'll get an extra discount on JibJab.com with our promo code RHAP. That's JibJab.com with promo code RHAP. All right, everybody, here we go. We're very excited today because we have a new inductee to the Five Timers Club on Rob Has a Podcast on the episode recaps. Probably, we didn't know if it was going to get to five. If you went back and listened to our first episode recap together from Survivor One World, but here we are, one of the very few and the only woman in the Five Timers Club. Here is the winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark.
Woo-hoo!
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sophie, you've come so far.
Wait, because what happened in the first podcast?
You were very like on the defensive. Like you were very much like, oh well, what does it matter? Everybody hates me anyway. You were coming off of your win, and you were very much concerned with how your perception is, and now you don't care.
I don't give a shit. But I feel like you were on the offensive.
No. Because yeah. You know what? Here's what happened.
Mine was reactionary.
Because when you did the exit interview with me after your win, then you were very passive aggressive, very Jatia-like. Yes. Yes. In your exit interview. And then a lot of the listeners were on you from that.
Hmm. Okay.
So there was tension before we even got to that point.
God, me and Jatia.
Yes. Yeah.
Same sentence.
Yeah. Who knew? All right. Well,
same breath.
Sophie, congratulations. We're very excited to have you back here today for episode recap number 5. If you're scoring at home, it's Survivor One World. And then I think we skipped you in the Philippines. I don't know if it was.
No, I didn't watch the Philippines.
Okay, good. Well, that was good. Then you came.
I skipped you.
Yeah. Then you came back strong for Karamoan, and then you've been a mainstay since Blood versus Water, then Cagayan, and now here you are back for San Juan del Sur.
And extracurricular rap activities.
Yes, yes. Well, I think then really you earned your stripes on the reality Game Masters.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which we did right before I think you came back for Survivor Karamoan.
Right. Which was the prelude to Cochran winning his show.
Yeah.
Right?
It was the prophecy, foreshadowing. Yeah.
Man.
Very good. And Sophie, I know you have so many things going on right now. What are you doing with Dr. Oz now?
Oh, what am I doing with Dr. Oz? I'm working as a medical producer on his show and a researcher. So basically I help make sure, I help substantiate all the claims we make on the show.
Yes.
And then I produce my own segments. So the first segment I produced was yeast infections.
Okay.
I had this like huge tug of war between the bacteria and the yeast. And we had this woman and there was a vagina. It was awesome.
Oh my God. Is this on YouTube?
I think it's on the Dr. Oz website. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do a little here and there.
Also, believe it or not, I think
on the show with Probst.
Yeah, I saw the show, Probst. I was also going to say, I think there's a bit of history also. I think this is the first time that yeast infections has come up in 5-year history of Rob as a podcast. So congratulations on that honor as well.
Thank you.
We'll have to update the Wikipedia page. So what happened? And then so Jeff Probst came to visit. Why was he on Dr. Oz?
Good question. He was coming on to tell people about how to, you know, fix broken arms. He's a bit of an expert in wilderness medicine.
Fix broken arms?
Yeah, we had like a, you know, what do you do if you're outside and somebody breaks an arm or has a nosebleed? We had all these different scenarios. And Probst, from his time on the show, obviously, has become somewhat of a doctor.
But he has never once, other than, okay, tell me how you're feeling. Like, he is nowhere to be found when there's any sort of, like, actual, like, procedure being done on somebody.
Yeah, well, he must have studied up then for this show. He acted like he really knew what was going on.
Maybe there's like dream teamers and stuff that go down.
I feel like he caught Russell Swan before he hit the ground.
Okay, but he didn't really administer any treatment.
Well, next time somebody has a nosebleed on the show, I anticipate that Jeff Probst would be the one to go over and do something.
Okay.
Or lose a tooth.
Okay, well,
I'm practically the Jeff Probst mentor now.
Okay, so you taught him everything he knows now?
Well, now I have. Yeah, I came on and I taught him about how to preserve a tooth if it falls out.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll be the next Ramona.
Like JT.
Yeah, exactly, like JT.
Now, when you say you'll be the next Ramona, you mean like the fourth person voted off of a season?
No. What's the doctor's name?
Dr. Ramona.
Yeah.
Not Ramona Gray from Survivor Borneo?
Not Ramona Gray, although I can see why she must be on just the tip of your tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a pioneer. Oh my God. And there was something else that I wanted to bring up with this, but now I can't remember what it was. All right, we'll come back to it. Anyway, so Sophie, we big episode last night. We have to get into talking about this.
Huge because, episode. You know, I was watching the episode and I was so bummed that this was going to be the episode that I had to be on.
Why?
I so wanted to be on the feminist episode from last week where all the guys are being assholes. I felt like that would be a really good
We can touch on it, but
I thought it was so fun with my whole like broadcast with Malcolm. I could kind of redo that over again, just get the script back.
Yes, you were very anti the Three Amigos.
Yeah, and I was ready to like bring that back tonight.
All right, well, we can get into it, but we have real stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to really get into this because Stephen Fishback and I were in a brutal disagreement last night about this.
Oh, don't tell me which side everybody's on.
Okay, I won't. So Stephen and I vehemently disagreed about what was the right move for John. What's your take on that? And then you can guess who was on which side.
So the question is whether or not John should have stuck with Jeremy in his first thing or flipped.
Yes.
I think
And then guess who is with who is on which side?
Well, so last night, my initial reaction was screw initial reaction. I think he made the right move. And I would say that Stephen agrees with me.
Why do you say that?
I'm going to compliment you. I think Rob is with me.
Okay. So.
Well, I just think that mine, it's obviously the right move. And so I'm trying to, well, unfortunately, I think I was giving Stephen a compliment there because I was thinking that Stephen probably would have come up with the right answer.
Yes.
And not you.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I was the one that I didn't agree with it, but I feel like I feel like Stephen and I have almost reversed course because I feel like usually I'm the person that says, hey, switch it up. Let's make a big move. Let's swing. And Stephen is the one that says, no, you know, hold the line, stay the course. But Stephen felt like, it was the right move.
In a way, aren't John and Jacqueline like holding the course of being flippers?
Yes.
So in a way, they kind of are holding the course. They're not changing up their game that much. And I was thinking about this because I also am very much on the Stephen camp in general of hold the course. You know, don't create big waves. Why are you making big moves for a big move? And I was actually thinking today, I was like, why am I so pro this move? And I think there's a big difference between flipping on a loved one season and flipping on a non-loved one season, because John and Jacqueline aren't just one person flipping. They're like, they're not a majority, but there's two of them. And it gives them so much more wiggle room to flip back and forth because they're not actually giving any one side the numbers. They're like constantly evening out either side such that they're, you know, continuously the swing votes. And if it had just been one of them, then immediately when you flip, you give those people you flip to all the power and you're at the bottom.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge difference between two people flipping together and one flipper.
Okay, well, that's an interesting part of this. Now, it's also interesting that they didn't really flip between two sides in back-to-back tribal councils. Like they were with the Josh, Reed, and then Wes and Keith and Alec thing. And they flipped to the Jeremy, Natalie, Baylor, Missy thing. So they flipped to that side. And then within that, they flipped like away from Jeremy and Natalie. And Missy and Baylor flipped on Jeremy and Natalie. So they didn't flip flop back and forth. They sort of folded a piece of paper and then folded it in half again.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call them flippers. I think they're dictating the game. I think the bigger question about should they have flipped would have been with Missy and Baylor.
Yeah. So you feel like the question is, should Missy and Baylor have done what they did?
Yeah, because honestly, when I was watching the episode and John went up to Missy with the whole, because John went up to her with the whole, let's try to get Jeremy out, right? He was the one who brought it up.
Yes.
I was worried at that moment. And I wrote down in my little notes that I take before I do a Rob Has a Podcast.
Wow.
Why does John have such faith to think that, you know, Missy is going to go with him, not Jeremy, somebody that she's been, you know, aligned with closer in the previous episode. So I thought that was his mistake. He must have had more insight, obviously, into his relationship with Missy than I did.
But here's my argument about this, is that there's 10 people left in the game at this point. So why is this six starting to cannibalize each other when they're giving the numbers away?
Right. I mean, I feel like for John and Jacqueline specifically, because they're really the people I see who has made the decision last time. For them, I think that they're trying to navigate their way to a point where they have more power than they do now. Because even though they're making decisions, they're very much the swing vote. And I think that because they're a couple, they're a little bit of a target. And I see this move just as last week's move, you know, kind of one more step that they said, what is the right decision to make right now to get us to the, you know, to the next tribal? I think that they're trying to deflect as much attention as they can off of them and get as far as they can with as many couples. I don't know if they have an end game. What's their end game?
I don't think they have an end game either. Like, you don't hear John talking about, well, I got to take out Jeremy because he is he's the biggest strategic threat and I've got to get rid of him. You know, he seems to be keyed in on he has a good story in the final three and he'll be able to win the jury vote. But I don't feel like he's saying like, oh, I'll be able to run the game if Jeremy's out of here.
Right. Right. No, I feel like this season, everybody is playing very much day to day.
Day to day.
Unlike Jeremy. I think Jeremy had an end game. And I think Jeremy and Natalie had some kind of end game.
Yeah, I agree.
Everybody else I see is playing day to day. That point you brought up, though, about the Jeremy winning the jury.
Yes.
That was like the huge question I was asking myself last night, looking at the people left and, you know, Josh and the jury, is I'm not quite sure if I know how this jury is going to vote. Right. There's been some hints. There's hints that, like, when he talked about Jeremy, there's hints that there's been conversations saying that they're going to vote with who needs it the most, right? When he was saying Jeremy is such a, you know, shoo-in for that. And then there are hints, you know, with Natalie giving away Natalie and Jeremy both giving away their rewards, that maybe, you know, maybe it's going to be a jury that's voting on, you know, kind deeds. Jacqueline actually seemed strangely touched by all of that. But it just, it's, you know, it's not, there's not that much strategy this season. I'm curious to see which way what the jury is going to value.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. And not something that we usually think about during the midseason.
Right. Right. But yeah. I think it matters. I think it's going to matter hugely in the coming episodes because they're obviously thinking about it. And I think, you know, people like so many people have screwed themselves over in different aspects of the game. You know, like it seems like Keith and Alec, if this is a jury who's voting on the nice guy, they're not going to win because they're seen as like the misogynist assholes. Right. And like Baylor is seen as the girl who doesn't do any strategy. And everybody seems to have some kind of, you know, label. And I think the question now to figure out who can win is to figure out what are these people valuing in this game. I mean, it's just a strange group of people. Like you see them going on these rewards and they're not talking about strategy and they're talking about how wonderful it is just to spend time with each other. I just think that this jury is going to be a strange one.
It's going to be very interesting. Now, going back to Survivor South Pacific, now you guys had a big alliance. What was that look? Why did you roll your eyes? You don't want to go back to Survivor South Pacific?
Rob, the people can't see me rolling my eyes.
I can, though. Yeah. And so going back to Survivor South Pacific, you were in an alliance that had six people. And then you guys brought in Cochran and he was the seven. And your six stayed tight, as opposed to this six, which at final 10 is already turning on each other. And you guys were successful. Like, say what you want from the people that maybe should have made moves but didn't, who were, you know, the Ricks and Brandons and Ednas and Cochran ultimately. But, you know, you were in the top three. You didn't need to make a move, but this six stayed together. So what did you guys do right that this six did wrong?
Honestly, I think loved ones has a huge part in it. When I look at that six alliance, I see Jeremy very much in the coach position, I would say. And I think Natalie, I see myself in Natalie a lot. And I think that because they didn't have loved ones, they bought into this kind of six-person alliance cult type thing that they were trying to create. And you could see that Jeremy was trying to institute the same, you know, he was using we a lot and he was trying to keep everybody in check. But I think what he didn't realize is that when you have somebody who's truly a partner out there and truly a connection to the world, it's like when you're at a, you know, when you're in one of those, you know, Charles Manson's cults or whatever, if you're talking to your mom and yourself one every day, you're not going to be sucked in. And I think the same thing was happening out there. I think if you have somebody who really is a connection to reality and you're able to have these real one-on-one conversations with that, you know, they're completely, you know, you trust each other. I don't think you can have a cult-like atmosphere, which is really what makes those strong alliances work. It's what made, whether or not you buy it into it or not, that's how you can cultivate it, is because through everybody's weaknesses, through missing home. And I think that when you have people like John and Jacqueline and Missy and Baylor who are able to rely on each other for strength, you don't need to rely so much on this, like, oh, let's all be one happy family and we're going to get you there together.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the problem.
Okay, I like that, Sophie. What you're saying is that, so when you're on Survivor, you're hanging out with these people all day, and it seems like you're going to be like best friends with them forever. And Coach is like, oh, when you can come to my house and do Coach Chi every day. And you're like, oh, this is great. And people are talking about, hey, let's all open a Sonic together. And people are like, yeah, this is a good idea. I think we're going to do this. We'll talk every day on the phone. We're best friends now. But you have a constant there. And when you have a loved one that says, we're not going to be best friends with Coach every day. So why are we going to give him the money?
This guy's fucking crazy. Yeah.
No, stop it. he's so eccentric. So eccentric.
And lovable.
and lovable.
I like that. It's like a constant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally is.
That's a very interesting point. Now,
you know, I think about it. This is kind of a huge tangent, but I remember growing up and my sisters were twins, and I just remember going to soccer camp or any kind of activity like that and being so jealous of them that it was like they had themselves to talk to or to check in with. I felt like a lot of the issues that come with having to be away from home when you're younger, I just felt like my sisters didn't have because they had each other to rely on. And I see that very similarly, my soccer camp experiences when I was 9 years old and this loved one series.
Yes.
Very similar.
So yeah. Your sisters are 20s?
My sisters are 20s. Yeah.
Yes. Is that why you see a lot of yourself in Natalie?
Well, I'm not a twin.
No. But you can relate to twins.
I can relate to twins.
You're related to twins.
I'm related to twins. that was good.
Do you... Don't. It wasn't. do you feel like... were you and Albert... Can we make the comparison that you guys were like a pair?
Yeah.
And
we
so,
were.
And so was this like a situation where Albert would come to you and say like, hey... I got an idea. Let's vote out Coach. Let's do this. Let's go with Cochran. Let's come up with this plan. And often you were the one saying, no, we're not doing that idea. That's a bad idea. Now, between John and Jacqueline, we've seen them quite a bit not be on the same page about this. What do you do when you're in a pair and somebody wants to do an idea that you think is crazy?
Well, I think if you're John and Jacqueline, then there's no issue, right? Like, it makes me wish that Albert and I had gotten married before we went out there. It wouldn't have been a problem. But I mean, I think the loved one thing is a totally different thing. But if you're in a pair and you're not a loved one, I think the moment you start disagreeing is the moment you should start thinking about voting that person out.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you're in a loved one, then you disagree and you come to some kind of compromise. But with Albert and I think that I actually didn't realize, it took me a little while to realize that our disagreements for him meant that he was like ready to turn on me. And for me, I felt like this was a relationship and, you know, there were some problems, we were going to work through them. We disagreed about this one thing. And so I would say to anybody in the future that if you have somebody who you think is, you know, got your back and you make all your decisions together, the moment you guys are not in sync, you know, this person is not going to marry you when you're done. This is not your boyfriend, your best friend. You need to get out of this terrible toxic relationship. Vote them out.
Sophie, did you see that Albert, your almost husband?
Oh, he's on the top 10 list.
Top 20. Did you see he's nominated for top 20 hottest guys of all time?
Good for Albert.
Yeah, an Albert sighting.
Albert's huge. That's good.
Whoa.
That's great.
So where has he been?
I don't know. You know, I haven't talked to Albert in a long time. I think he's in Miami, assistant coaching baseball.
And not assistant dating coaching?
No, I think that's done. I think it's over.
Yeah, can you believe that?
You can only do that up to a certain point in your life. How old is Albert now, right? Like you want, I feel like for a dating coach, you want them to be between like 25 and 30 maybe?
No,
any older,
I think
you're like, why aren't you married?
You want the seasoned veteran. He's been around the block. He's seen it all.
Yeah, but you don't want like the 50-year-old dating coach who still hasn't gotten married himself, right? I mean, I guess it depends what your goals are.
depends what the goals are. So where do you think this goes from here now? So after this vote off where Jeremy gets blindsided, where does this go? Does this alliance of five hold together? And now do they start picking off the other people? Do the three guys, the three chauvinist guys that we're going to talk about also, do they pull in? Are they able to pull in Natalie? And say to her, hey, Natalie, you're like a guy. You should come and be on our group. And then she gets pissed off at them?
I don't know. I mean, I think that Keith is the big question here, right? Because Keith has power with this idol, but I don't have much faith that he's ever going to use the idol, you know, to make a big move. Keith, I think, should have used that idol to make the big move 2 times ago, right? To save Josh and to pull the big blindside. Or this last time, I think Keith really was, you know, I feel like Keith is using that idol as like, let's see how long I can wait until I can play this idol and see how far I can get in the game. He's not thinking of this idol as a huge bargaining chip to boost him to the top. He's thinking of it as like a way to like increase himself one level. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have much faith in those three guys to pull off something big. I have faith in everybody else to maybe use them as pawns. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they have possibility to win immunity challenges. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them are in the final three, but I don't see them staging some big coup against the other, you know, the other five. The question really for me is, where does Reed sit in all of this? Was he being used by the, you know, by the couples? I don't see where his in is.
The Reed thing is really fascinating, I think, because, you know, we saw in the episode, Reed was like, well, I'm going to make these inroads and I'm going to do this. I'll burn the camp down if I have to, which is typically not a good sign once you start talking about burning the camp down. And so he goes through Keith's bag and finds the hidden immunity idol. And then he goes and shares that information with Missy. And I was like, he's going to play himself right into, they're going to put the votes on him. Because he doesn't have a hidden immunity idol. But lo and behold, when the votes come up, he's one of the five people that voted for Jeremy. So
yeah, and why didn't Reed take that hidden immunity idol clue to Keith and say, I know you have it. Well, let's use it. We need to use it.
I don't know. I think he was just out with those guys. So I'm not sure if maybe Josh was the glue in that alliance. And then once Josh is gone, then Reed is now considers himself a free agent and he goes running back to Missy because they have the numbers. But it's going to be really interesting because those guys all voted for Reed last night. The three, the Keith, Wes and Alec group, they all voted for Reed. So was there a falling out? Are those guys all pissed at Reed? Do they not like Reed anymore? And so could that potentially signal that Reed won't go back with those guys, even though they would need his number?
Well, I think Reed is going to flop whatever way the wind goes, right? I think right when Josh left, Reed basically was like, I'm torching the place. I don't care. That is not the attitude of somebody who's like ready to make huge new alliances and forge bonds. That is the attitude of a guy who's now willy-nilly going to do whatever it takes to get him to the next level. So I don't think he's completely on the outs with Keith and Wes. I think the bigger question about the direction of the game is, will those two couples stick together and try to pull a fifth? Will they agree on the fifth, with both couples hoping that when it comes to the final five, they have that fifth in their back pocket? Or will those couples turn on each other sooner? Hmm. Right? Because ideally, in John and Jacqueline's world, they say, okay, it's us and, you know, and Reed. And in their minds, they have Reed. And Missy and Baylor think they have Reed. And then they see at the final five who actually has Reed. And so I think if the four of them can decide on something they each think they have in their back pocket, that would be a really easy way to get to the final three. I'm not sure if that would take a lot of management.
Well, let's go back to our twinnie, to Natalie, because do you think that she is necessarily...
God, I forgot about her.
Yeah. Is she necessarily the next target? Or do you think that they could say to her like, hey, look, we had a problem with Jeremy. Jeremy was the one, but she also knows the same information that they were afraid of, that Jeremy said all those things to her. I think that John has the idol and all that stuff. So is Natalie going to go back to camp and just play ball and be like, hey, whatever beef you guys had with Jeremy, that's fine. That's not my thing. Or is she going to expose what Jeremy told her about that John has the idol? We saw she said, what the F happened, Missy? So do you think that Natalie will play ball with those guys and could potentially go back to being the fifth? Or do you think that Reed has taken her spot in that alliance?
No, Reed has taken her spot. Either way, I mean, didn't you see Natalie with her John Rocker thing? Natalie is not somebody who kind of lets things blow over and then goes to the next thing. Natalie's going to blow up at camp. The thing is that I don't think Natalie's a target. So I think even if she blows up, I don't think she's going next, right? Because I think people saw Jeremy as the head of that thing, and she doesn't have an idol. And people now think Keith has an idol. People are going to think John has an idol. I don't see the next person going Natalie. I see the next thing going as some kind of work for an idol flush. You know, it's going to have to be one of those votes.
So is Natalie going to vote with which side? Like, is she voting with the five or is she voting with the three guys?
I think Natalie's voting with the three guys.
That would be interesting. Now, those three guys, for all of the chauvinistic things that they've said, they tend to say like, hey, Baylor, you're going to go get some wood today. Oh, wait, that's right. I forgot. You can't. Maybe Natalie will. And so it seems like those guys are indifferent towards Natalie.
Right. Yeah. God, as much as I don't like the chauvinistic crap, I really find Baylor so annoying. And so
Baylor. OK, so you're down on Baylor.
Right. Isn't everybody down on Baylor? I feel bad about being down on Baylor, but I just feel like
Parvati was pro Baylor.
Parvati's down on Baylor?
Yeah. No, she's up. She's up on Baylor.
Wow. I am down on Baylor. The thing about Baylor, and I think what's going to screw her in the end, and this is the reason I think Baylor is never going to win, is that Baylor, I think, without Missy, had the potential to be seen as, look at this tough young girl really surviving out here. She's doing her best. You know, she gets to the end. Kudos to, you know, Baylor and Natalie White and Jenna Maraskin and all, you know, the whole bunch. But I think Baylor, because of Missy, as, you know, natural for any young woman with a mother there, really relies on Missy a lot. And I think everybody, from what I've seen in the secret scenes and from what's shown in the show, I think people don't respect that about that their relationship. And they feel like they don't respect either of them. Maybe this is just me projecting, but I feel like people think that Baylor, you know, she can't take care of herself, and that Missy is kind of too overprotective of Baylor.
Yeah.
So I don't see Baylor getting to the end and winning, because the only way she'd win would be with the, like, good for you, Baylor. And I feel like everybody else would just be like, well, good for Missy, and Baylor, you know, stop relying on your mom. You're a grown woman.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we saw a couple of mother-daughter teams in the previous Blood versus Water with Tina and Katie and Laura and Sierra. And I feel like Laura and Sierra couldn't be more different than Missy right. and Baylor. Like, I don't ever see Baylor voting out Missy. Yeah, she pushed her in the mud a couple times last night.
Yeah.
That she did. And then Jeff also referenced, like, oh, Baylor bested her mom previously. Well, if you recall the sumo at sea challenge that they did earlier this season, it was like Missy headbutted her in the mouth, and then I think Missy took a dive. After she
Baylor cried.
Yeah. After Baylor was like, you know, stop the competition. So I feel like as people, we don't like the person that sort of, like, you know, is born on third base. Not even anything like financially about Missy and Baylor, but it seems like that Missy is the one that's doing the work here, and Baylor is just along for the ride in the back seat.
But even that, you know, I kind of relate to Keith. I mean, not in the way
Keith Tollefson.
Yeah, no, I always relate to him. No, but Keith on the show, because I feel like Keith at one point, you know, berated Missy in this really rude way. But not only is Baylor unlikable because of their relationship, but I find that Missy's way of coddling her is also really unlikable.
Yeah, and Baylor isn't even the one that's like, hey, F you, Keith, or like, she's like, Mom, Keith's being mean to me. Keith's trying to make me do work today.
Yeah.
Right?
Whereas Keith and Wes's relationship, I could totally see Wes winning. You know, Wes, I thought, had a small glimmer of good strategy in this episode. The bit where he was talking about how he was going to start vocalizing, how he didn't want to be blindsided.
Yeah.
Is that a strategy that's been pulled in the past? I feel like that's what somebody should do from day one. They should make it known to everyone that, like, their jury vote, you know, is probably going to be a little dependent on, if you blindside me, I have zero respect. I'm the kind of person who likes to be told things to my face. And if you ingrain that enough in people out there, I feel like you could get people to tell you when they're voting you out. Hmm. If you, like, start from day one and make it clear. I mean, not like, hey, I'm going to hold up this sign and let you all know. But if you just drop it subtly for 39 days, that the blind side is the one thing you don't respect, and then you pull out the hidden immunity idol. I think that was brilliant. I don't know if Wes was doing it well, but
so if I was on the island and I was like, look, hey, my big thing is I don't want to be blindsided. Just whatever it is, like, you want to vote me off, just tell me, just don't blindside me. Are you really going to do that?
I think I would, at least.
You would.
Yeah. I mean, I practically did that to Rick, because Rick was so much of, like, a good old guy, and he very much wanted to separate the game from just being a good person. And the night that Rick got voted out in my season, I told him he was leaving beforehand, and he was pissed, and it was, like, really awkward conversation. But I felt like I had to do that for Rick because of the values he presented to me in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would. I thought I would lose his respect if I blindsided him. Okay. Either way, I lost his vote. So I don't know if this is a good example.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the thing. These people, that they have these stipulations and then you give them what they want and then they still don't vote for you. So I don't know. Is Rick anything at all like Keith? Can you give us any insight into, or are they not birds of a feather?
It's hard to tell because I really couldn't hear a word Rick said my whole season underneath the mustache.
You couldn't hear him at all?
No, because he had the mustache and the hat. It was really hard to hear what he was saying.
Oh my God.
But I think that they're similar and that they're both fans of the show and they seem to be really into it. And yet they don't seem to have really that much strategy. And they seem to like to stick in their alliance. There's definitely similarities.
Okay. Now, do you watch any of the secret scenes ever?
Oh my God, I watched them all. I watched them all this morning before I even got out of bed.
Yeah. Did you watch the secret scene of the people on the boat?
The Baylor stuff. Yeah. Another reason to not like Baylor.
All right, so let's just set that up because it was so bizarre. Baylor was like trying to like put the moves on Alec during the, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, it was like a fourth grade thing on a field trip where it was like, let me go. Can I sit on your lap in the bus?
Yeah,
it was really odd.
She was sitting on his lap and then she was like eating his cake. And then this lunatic like took his slice of cake and then threw it off the boat. Like, what?
And this poor starving Baylor was like, ha ha, so funny.
Yeah, and that was crazy. And then Alec started then talking about Jacqueline's butt during the challenge. He was like,
no, God, Alec is absurd. I am glad we don't see a lot of him. And his like douchebaggy necklace too. Like, what is up with that? Man,
I don't know. But wasn't that crazy that he was like saying, like, they're all on the boat, and it's John, Jacqueline, Alec. And then who else is there? Reed and Baylor. And then Alec is like, hey, Jacqueline, like the way that you were like wiggling your ass during the challenge, like that was awesome. That was awesome. Like, wasn't that awesome? And John was like in agreement. John isn't like, hey, like, let's easy, Alec.
Yeah.
Right.
It was weird. John didn't even, you looked at his face. He didn't even look the tiny bit surprised or like concerned by that. Maybe they were all drunk.
You know, it's weird. What's interesting is that we sort of lump in Alec and Keith and Wes together, the three of them, but I went back and I looked at that tribal council again, and Jacqueline, when she starts calling people out, you know, we thought it was like there was a six and a four, and that was, there was like a clear delineation. But Jacqueline says, you know what, of the four people that were there, she said that Reed and Alec have come and spoken with us, but right, Keith and Wes are the only two people that aren't. Right. So Alec's position in the game is also an interesting one.
Yeah. And I think this comes back to the jury votes, right? Because Alex, in a way, is a bit much bigger douchebag than Keith and Wes. But in the end of the day, are people going to vote and say, you didn't even talk strategy with us?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I'm a little confused about what kind of misogyny offends her more. Just like the straight up fart jokes or the, you know, why don't you give me the time of day?
Yeah. No, it's interesting because I thought Alec was the biggest offender out of that group. And of those three guys, he's the least offensive to Jacqueline.
So do you think Keith or Wes can win?
Do I think they could win?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to say that they're drawing dead just yet, but I think that if I was going to do power rankings, I think I'd probably have them in the bottom third of people.
Mm.
You know, I don't think it's good. This is a crazy season. Like, any of these people could go get voted out next, and any of these people could probably win the game.
Except Alec.
Except Alec. It would be tough for Alec. You know, somebody made a really good point in the comments yesterday, and I wish I would have wrote it down because it's interesting, because they compared this season to Survivor Nicaragua, where in Survivor Nicaragua, we thought going into the merge, okay, the two biggest strategists in the game are Marty and Brenda. And it's going to be a battle, and it's going to be either Marty is going to figure things out or Brenda is just going to run this thing. And very quickly after one another, I might have even been back to back, you know, Marty and Brenda go out very early on in the merge. And then the rest of the season is really wide open. You've got, you know, all the, you know, Holly and Jane and Fabio and Sash and all these people. And nobody's really, and oh, don't forget Dan Lembo and Nayanka and stuff like that. So, but it really was a wide open season where it wasn't like one, there was one dominant person. And I kind of feel like that this is shaping up very similarly. And coincidentally, it's a case of, I think, you know, when in Rome, right?
Right. It's funny because we always complained about the pagonging seasons, and now this one is turning out to be anything but a pagonging. And yeah, I still kind of find it kind of boring. It's like a monotone of strategy.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be like one of these seasons where it's like a Nicaragua or like it's a Gabon or something like that, where it's not, there's not one person that looks like they're playing like a fantastic game. It's sort of like a mishmash of a group of people that's, you know, constantly changing, but it doesn't seem like any one person is like really driving the strategy.
Except Baylor in her confessionals. I don't know if you've seen the secret scenes online.
But I don't watch any Baylor secret scenes.
Oh my God. It's not secret scenes, you know, it's just those like talking to the camera. Baylor, just like the way she speaks, it's as if she's running the game. If you go back and listen to each one of those, most people are just talking about, oh, I'm nervous about this, I'm nervous about this. And Baylor is like, I don't know, her shoulders are back. She's like one of those like kids, you know, those like cars in the amusement park where you think you're driving them, but it's just like going along the track.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like Baylor is. She's like all into it, but she's not doing anything. I don't know why I'm so frustrated with that girl.
She did win immunity last night.
She did with her. That was impressive with her feet.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy that Spider-Man couldn't win that, right?
You would think so, but I don't know that Baylor is just, that was good for her. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Reed has just, his legs are too long.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a thing that's, it's better not to be as tall on that. You have more control. Let's go back to this thing, this idea of giving up your reward.
Oh God!
You thought?
Well, I have a lot of strong opinions about this. Which
good.
In my head, I feel like I've had this conversation 100 times, but maybe we haven't. I think this is because during my season, something very similar happened when I think Albert gave up his reward to Cochran. And it was just so transparent, you know, like, let me give you this. I think Cochran had a great confessional about it where like, let me give you this massage, like on your way out. And I think that this is just, I don't think this is any kind of new revelation that I'm saying, but I think this is just one of, everybody has this, a lot of people have this flaw when they play Survivor where they think that the social aspect of the game can be played strategically. And the social aspect of the game is not something you can play strategically. It's something that's intrinsic to you. And I think there's not that many ways to improve on it, right? Like you can make small improvements on your character. Maybe you can say to yourself, if you're Keith, every day, talk to the girls, every day, talk to the girls, every day. You know, you could, there's only so much you can change about yourself when you're like alone on a desert island for 39 days. And so this idea that you can play the social game strategically by giving up rewards and doing all these like, you know, empty gestures, I feel like really, really shows a misunderstanding about what it takes to win at the end. I was not a fan of the move. I was surprised. Jacqueline actually seemed touched by it. But there was a secret scene, I think, where John talked about how it was, you know, obviously it was transparent and, you know, obviously for the end. And my question is, it was a little bit of a tit for tat, right? It was, you know, you did this for us and now we're doing this for you. Had they not given up that reward, would they still have that tat? Like, did John and Jacqueline feel better about turning on them because they were, well, then they would have already given their tit.
No. Whoa. Sophie, but I think that you're onto something because it's the kind of thing where it's like, hey, I'm being a nice person, but it's also the kind of thing that insults everybody's intelligence.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You know, you're not being a nice person. You're not doing something selfless. And Reed brought this up at Tribal Council where it's you're doing something that's very transparently selfless.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that's just everybody can see through. And it's also the kind of thing where it's like, hey, John and Jacqueline, now you owe me because I did this. And it's seemingly
exactly
on Survivor, it almost accelerates the person turning on you because it's like, oh, what do you
think? I agree.
Yeah, because
I agree. I think that not only does it not is it not useful in the jury stage of things to say, hey, look what a great guy I was, but I think also that it actually is a sign that there's not enough trust in that relationship. So you think that the love language you have to use at that moment is gifts, right? There's trust in that relationship. You wouldn't feel like, oh, let me give you something. Let me prove this. So the minute that happened, I felt like John and Jacqueline should be wary of them, that they were, you know, trying to butter them up and trying to like, it's the same way I feel like sometimes when somebody shows somebody an immunity idol, it's this weird gesture that means trust, but does it actually mean trust?
Sophie, I like that you bring up the love language of the survivors. Now, what's your survivor love language? How do people express to you in Survivor? We don't have to talk about real life, but we can if you want to. In Survivor, what is the way that people endear themselves to you trust-wise? Is it by telling you? Is it by showing you a gesture? It's not by giving you a reward.
I remember what the five love languages are. I feel like gesture. I'm trying to remember, you know, real life. It's always different, like the ones you respond to and the ones you do and the one, you know. I think words of affirmation maybe would be my survivor love language. And probably the one that I respond to maybe would be either words of affirmation or acts of service, which I think is actually the same in real life. I think also physical touch on Survivor is a big deal, right? You always talk about who you're sleeping next to each other.
Interesting. Yeah. Nobody ever tried to touch me anytime I was on Survivor. No. So I think I would just have to go by, for me, I think it would just be like the constant talking, just like keeping the conversation going. I feel like as long as like the, you know, the communication lines are open, I feel good. And then it's
words
like
of affirmation. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when the conversation is like, is hard or it's forced or sporadic, then I would feel like something wasn't up.
Right.
And
right.
I feel like
that conversation between Jeremy and John.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was so odd. Even on the rewatch, that conversation where Jeremy was like, I'm going to talk to John because John is the worst liar. And Jeremy is like, look at this clue. It said, where do you think the idol is? Do you think somebody has it? And John was just like, like he didn't even have words.
Yeah. I wonder, I feel like Jeremy didn't really think that through. I think Jeremy did a good job of thinking up, how can I find out whether or not John has the idol or not? But what Jeremy didn't think about is it a good idea to have John think that I know, you know? Like, if I already know that John probably has the idol, what use was that conversation unless it was going to come to some kind of conclusion, right? It just sowed distrust between their alliance members.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're right that Jeremy probably didn't need to go and have that conversation. He already knew he didn't need that confirmation to go do that. And it did just accelerate that John was already feeling threatened by him to decide to go ahead and move on. You know, sending Jeremy to Exile Island also was a big factor last night. So Jeremy going to Exile Island first. Now, do you even like Exile Island?
I don't think it's really done much for this season. It probably does stuff that we don't even realize, that people are probably a little more tired and there's probably undercurrents that go on because of Exile. But I feel like the last season that really Exile mattered was Token Chains, where there were real alliances being made out there. There were secret alliances. I think China too at Exile. But this, I mean, I like it because I like it that there are rewards. I like that there's no Redemption Island. And if I have to have Exile Redemption, I'll choose Exile. But no, I don't think it's added anything that special.
All right, so Jeremy, it seemed like he said he wanted to go to Exile Island beforehand because he wanted to go and look for the idol. And so if he found the idol, he was going to do a move like what Coach did in Survivor South Pacific and what other people have done. He wants to show it to the group. Say, this is our idol for the group. And he felt like it was going to bond people together. Now, you touched on this early. Does that work?
See, that's the thing. I think it works in certain situations, and I think you have to have read the situation well. And this is obviously what Jeremy didn't do. Jeremy thought that he had this cult-like Boston Rob Coach alliance where it was him and Natalie, and they were, if you watch him, he keeps saying we, he's talking about us. And so I think in that situation, the idol only reinforces these bonds. But I think that if there's any amount of distrust, That idol really just serves, you know, to put a target on your back. And I think especially the loved ones, especially when you, when that, that six person alliance has pairs in it. Again, I think those like real trustworthy conversations between the pairs are so dangerous. I think that he misread the situation, especially the fact that people had just flipped over. This was not a cult that was cultivated from day one. This is something that just got thrown together last time. And that idol, you know, I think building trust with an idol is often something that maybe happens pre-merge, but post-merge, letting an alliance that just got thrown together, that you have, you know, a huge advantage in the game, not smart.
Sophie, can Missy win the game?
No.
No, why not?
Missy can't win the game because everybody, I don't think people respect her in a relationship with Baylor. Maybe I just don't like her much. I don't think she can win the game. No, who's voting for Missy? Missy would have to be sitting next to Alec and Baylor at the end to win.
Interesting. So who do you like this season? Reed?
Who do I like Reed.
Yes.
I like Natalie a lot.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, I think there's a group of people who, if they're at the end, then I guess you're right, Missy could win. There's, you know, it's kind of up for grabs. But I think that the four runners to really grab jury votes, if they're in the final three, would be Reed, Natalie, John, and Jacqueline. And I think maybe Keith. Maybe Keith or Wes. I don't know. I'm really torn on them. But I think the people who are out are Missy, Baylor, and Alec.
Missy, Baylor, Alec. Okay. No, none of the Wilsons.
Who are the Wilsons?
Well, I'm not sure. Do they have the same last name, Missy and Baylor? I know it's Baylor Wilson. I'm not sure what Missy's last name is.
Okay. I'm not sure.
All right. Let's jump into some questions here from the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast. I have a lot for you. Are you okay with all these questions?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Let's start with Ron Chan. Ron wants to know, Sophie, which player this season would benefit most from a consultation with Dr. Oz?
I think Wes, right? He doesn't even know how to like eat properly. He's always overeating.
Yes.
He's losing a lot of weight. Seems like he's passing a lot of gas. I'd be worried that he's not taking enough probiotics or any probiotics out there.
Yeah.
What,
do they give you a probiotic now?
No, I don't think they do.
Oh, okay.
I think Dr. Oz probably thinks that he needs one. Everybody could use a probiotic.
Sure, why not?
Right?
Well, let's go back to, speaking of the whole, you know, belch, fart, whatever, pass gas thing from last week. I know you were fired up about it. What in particular about that? You know, was there no bodily functions on Survivor South Pacific? Was everybody pretty well behaved?
You know, I wasn't really even that fired up about it. But the Survivor South Pacific was really strange because we had Edna, and Edna loved to talk about bodily functions. I mean, Edna made some of the most disgusting jokes I ever heard, which I realize now looking back, and she was always talking about her bowel movements and like when she had gone, when she's going next, and like how it was. I mean, it was just TMI. I mean, Edna was TMI
clinical.
About everything.
It was clinical, though,
but it was
right?
clinical. Yes. We didn't know she was a doctor though, and I realized now that all that talk was just like doctor talk.
Did she lie about her profession?
Yeah, she did.
What did she say she was?
You know what? Now I can't remember. I mean, maybe she said she was a nurse, but I don't even think she said she was a nurse. No, she said she ran a business.
Okay.
Which is for the berries thing. But like the first thing she said to me when we were done the game was, I just want you to know I'm a doctor. I was like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah, well, so, that makes sense. Yeah. If you're a doctor and you're trying to hide it, you probably shouldn't talk a lot about, you know, medical
bowel
stuff.
Movements,
yeah.
BMs. She had a lot of like really gross ideas about how to attract the sharks.
Sharks. Oh my God. All right, we'll leave that alone. Yeah. Okay.
I think we already did enough today with the yeast infection.
Yeah, we'll leave that to the imagination. But as far as what was it about these three guys that really annoyed you last week? Because you were fired up on Twitter.
God, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I guess it was just the typical, it was just seemed so classic, right? That like they weren't even speaking a word to Jacqueline. It was just, I feel like the editors got handed a gift if they wanted to do a show on sexism in Survivor. The idea of John leaving and suddenly nobody's talking to Jacqueline. I mean, there's not even that much to talk about or debate. It was just so open. I'm not so into the like, oh, you're not being like respectful around me with the farts. And I don't even know if that was so much of their complaint. I feel like the more real complaint was the, you know, you don't talk strategy to me. You respect me as a player.
Now, I know that's a tricky thing because I'm trying to think of like who they have the bonds with. And, you know, you had Alec and Wes. Those guys were on the original alliance with Jacqueline. So they should be able to talk with strategy with Jacqueline. I mean, they were together on the John Rocker thing. They were together really, you know, since that point in the game. They were, you know, and then they both... you had then Keith switched over and those guys left. So all three of them have been in the tribe with Jacqueline. You wouldn't think there would be like a wall between those guys.
Exactly. I think also the most fascinating point was when I think it was Alex said something like, oh, don't worry about Jacqueline. John will tell her what to do or something. Like this assumption that that relationship worked in that direction. And then it so beautifully worked in the opposite direction. I just thought that was awesome. Really like that scene.
Okay.
I'm always curious when things like this happen, especially when there's a lot of talk in the Survivor community about its ripple effect through the future seasons. And we talk a lot about Russell and his ripple effect. And I feel like Tony, there's a bit of it this year, right? There was a scene where Jeremy was saying how he wanted to be like Tony. And I also wonder, I feel like that scene of sexism was one of the really, I can't remember a scene that was so overtly just about sexism in Survivor in a long time. And I wonder if that's something that will now ripple through the seasons, whether it's happening or not. I wonder if it's something that the women will latch onto and say that they're feeling it more, whether or not it's true or not true, or they'll just identify with it more, or if it's something that men in future seasons of Survivor will be more cognizant of, especially if it bites them in the butt. Cause I think, you know, more and more Survivor's getting so self-referential. I think this will have a bigger impact on, I think it'll have a bigger impact on future seasons than even this season. Now that people are watching this happen.
See, I disagree because future contestants, don't watch previous seasons, Sophie. they just come in after they get found. They just come in blind. They're going to wing it. Okay. All interesting stuff. Interesting. So let's jump into, let's see. Matt Ligori wants to know, finish this sentence. The best way for Reed to get to the final three is by blank.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. My contact.
Oh, no. Do we need to stop, Sophie?
Let me just take it out. Oh, my God.
Okay. Sophie's dealing with a contact lens. If only Jeff Probst was here right now.
Oh my God. Sorry. 1 second. Holy shit. That hurts. Oh my God. I'm sorry.
All right. I'm going to pause the podcast here. And when Sophie's eye is back up to par, we'll come back and finish the interview. All right. All right. So
I was completing a sentence.
Yes. I'm sorry. We had to break here for a minute. This was the first time ever in the history of the podcast that we had to do a medevac and Sophie needed medical attention. Sophie, I'll be like Jeff Probst. Sophie, what's the latest? What's going on with your eye? Can you give us an update?
I don't know, Jeff. It's just really stinging and it feels like it's red. And I feel like I can't see. It's all blurry.
Yeah. So you're having an issue with a contact lens?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to go home.
You're leaving? So you're quitting the game. You're quitting the podcast.
No, I'm not quitting, Jeff. I want to stay. Nothing would take me out of this podcast. You know, this is my life dream and that I'm not a quitter and I'm a strong, independent woman. But sometimes my body, like it dictates what goes on more than my mind does. And my body is telling me I have to go.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Tell me about this relationship. So are you able to continue?
Yes, let's go. Okay. I'm filling a sentence in. Reed is going to make it to the end because I don't know. I don't remember. Let's move on to the next question.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Okay. Mike Bloom, the great Mike Bloom wants to know, do you think that Jeff would have let Albert drop his stack and help you in the immunity challenge if he were using only his feet?
Well, now, because I feel like Jeff, now it's like any kind of negotiation. I should have made a negotiation with Jeff when he said no to me.
Yeah.
Like anything, it's all willy-nilly now, right?
What would you negotiate?
I would have been like, okay, he can't pick up his staff, but what if he uses only his feet?
Jeff's like, all right, I'll allow it.
All right.
I'll allow it. Okay. All right, let's take a question from Raphael Marie, who wants to say, does John taking out Josh and Jeremy in only two tribal councils make him the new Dragon Slayer?
Only if he wins, right? Only if he wins.
Only if he wins? Can there be multiple Dragon Slayers? Also, or then?
No. First of all, I mean, technically, no, right? Like, I get metaphorically he's trying to say that he's a big ass deal. But technically, the only way to become a Dragon Slayer is to be knighted a Dragon Slayer by the previous Dragon Slayer. Coach bestowed that honor on me, and I have yet to bestow it on somebody else.
So,
but metaphorically, maybe sure he's somewhat in the category. But no, he is not a Dragon Slayer, nor will be.
So you're the new Dread Pirate Roberts, and you're not ever giving it up?
Not ever giving it up.
Not even to Baylor?
Not even to Baylor, as much as I love her. God bless her.
What about to Natalie? What if Natalie wins? Will you give her the title?
Yeah, maybe. But I feel like there has to be a ceremony. This is like a bigger deal than we're all just like, it's not going to happen on Rob Has a Podcast.
What is that supposed to mean?
Maybe this will be another extracurricular activity. We could create a series of the, you know.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Let me give you I have a question for you. Ding, marry, yeah. Kill. I have a ding, marry, kill for you.
These.
All right. Ding, marry, kill. I have a Survivor Family Feud, a Serial podcast, or a MasterChef Junior podcast, and a bonus Jack and Jill podcast.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I get to ding, marry, or kill double on two of them.
On one of them.
Okay. I think you have to kill the MasterChef kids because you obviously can't ding them for obvious reasons.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Probably can't marry them either. Yeah.
You also don't want to marry them. All right.
But in all seriousness, these are the proposed Sophie projects that are on the table.
Yeah. Well, now I feel like somebody's done our podcast about Serial, the podcast.
Yeah.
Slate,
now, first off,
I think we could do a podcast about Slate's podcast.
That would be fantastic. That'd be fantastic. Sophie, let me first give you some credit here because you were one of the first people. Of course, there's the wildly popular podcast Serial, which mm-hmm. if you've never heard of it, you should check it out. And it's the story of there's like this 15-year-old murder investigation, and there's a woman who's like reopened the case and is going back and talking to the person who's accused of murder and a bunch of the witnesses and going over all of the details of this investigation. It's Serial with an S, like a serial killer, even though it's not a serial killer, but it's serialized, as in there's multiple episodes after one another. So Jeff, definitely check that out. But Sophie, you were the first one to say we should do a podcast about this podcast.
Yes, and you ignored me.
I ignored you. I was like asleep at the switch. Yeah. I said, a podcast about a podcast. Little did I know it would be the biggest thing to ever hit podcasting.
Yeah, it's okay. From now on, you'll know to listen to me.
Now you have lots of good ideas, but I'm just like I'm so. Like in the day to day of Rob as a podcast, it's hard for me to like, you know, make a big move.
Yeah. I think maybe I should be like now crowned the like big thinker of big the Rob thinker. Has a podcast. Yeah. You'll just consult me for ideas. And I'll just, tweet them out. Oh that's, my gosh.
That's fun. MasterChef Junior. That's also another thing that you want to talk about.
Did you enjoy that?
I didn't watch it yet. You and Eliza the other night were tweeting about this.
It is my favorite show of all time. Oh. It makes me want them to do a Survivor Kids edition. Because listen, the kids are
like
so
Kid Nation?
Earnest. Yeah, like Kid Nation, except I want to starve them. I want them to be on the island. I mean, believe me, it's like kids say the darndest thing, but with an actual plot.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just the best TV.
And so what's the format for MasterChef Junior? Is it, am I on it or is it you and Eliza?
Oh, the podcast?
Yes.
That's a really good question. I feel like, you know what? Let's just wait a couple of years and we could have your Dominique host it.
Dominique. I think the pronunciation is Dominic.
Oh, Dominic. Yeah, Dominic. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you want him to be on MasterChef Junior?
No, no. I don't want him to be on it. I want in 3 years for Dominic to host a podcast where Eliza and I tell Dominic what's up.
Okay. So you want the kids' perspective on MasterChef Junior?
No, I want Eliza and my perspective with the kid hosting.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. All right. And then as far as Survivor Family Feud, this is just a logistical nightmare.
This is a heartbreaker.
All right. How about this? Let me, I was thinking about this recently. Like, what if we played it like over a Google Hangout? So not in person. Would that be palatable to you?
Yeah, that would satisfy me. How would we buzz in?
That I'd have to work out the logistics of.
There might be a website where we could all click the button and it would know which computer clicked the button or something.
Yeah,
or we can hold up signs.
Yeah, I think so. Now, would it be like East Coast versus West Coast? Like if I had like three or four survivors like in one location in New York, and then a few other survivors in a location in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of the fun of Family Feud is when it's like a really tight game and you get to the third round. And if the Wyatt and Cheese crew plays anybody, it's like going to be over in the first round. Have you ever seen those episodes where just like there's no rooms for the third round? It's like 299-0.
I don't know. What if it's like, okay, so it's the Wyatt and Cheese
production here,
East Coast team. And then you have like the Bushkowskis family and friends. I bet you could get like Otis, Vetus, like Julie Berry. I think you could get a decent West Coast showing also.
Well, okay, then. We'll see. We'll tone it down on this side to make it an even game.
Because if we scale down what we're thinking as far as like logistics, I think there's a much more realistic chance of it happening.
Oh, no, I have a much better idea.
Yeah.
Think of scaling up with logistics. What if we got every season of Survivor to get together 5 people? And we had a huge Family Feud tournament of champions where it's like me, Albert, Cochran, Coach, Don, and we're playing like, you know, James and Courtney Yates and Amanda Kimmel and I don't know who was on that season.
John Robert.
Yeah, it would be like, we could do it March. We could do March Madness Family Feud.
March. Oh, boy.
Make it happen.
All right. We'll see. We'll see about that. Again, this is like
that's a great idea.
Yeah. This is, I think, where we've gone too far, where we've gotten to the point where you have too big of an idea. Now it can't happen. We got to start small.
I think that's a fair response, but I think it's also a good idea to remember what happened last week with the Serial podcast and what ended up happening there.
Yes. But that one's on me.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my idea for a podcast? This is what I've been, and you tell me if this is viable or not. So, you know, at one point we were talking about like Reality Game Masters 2, and maybe it should be like a murder mystery, but we couldn't really come up with a way to make it a game, to make it sort of like something we could film. It wouldn't be really expensive, but would it be interesting if we did a podcast that was like Serial, which was investigating a murder mystery that was like, you know, a fake one, like we had a fake murder mystery, but we were talking to the people that were involved with the case.
Okay, so what I feel like what would happen? We'd have a murder mystery dinner party, maybe with a lot of survivors, and it would play out, and then you would do a Serial podcast about it.
Yeah, like, but then somebody really got murdered in the story. And then I'm talking to all the people that were there.
Right. So somebody's going to have to murder someone.
Yes. Yes.
I feel like you should be talking to like Dan Liu about this and not
Dan Liu. Why would I talk to Dan Liu about this?
I don't know. Someone else.
Oh, so you're saying thumbs down on this.
Why don't you do the podcast about, haven't there been like TMZ stories about survivors? Like what about the guy, the Brian Heidick and the dog?
Yeah, so you
like,
want
is there some story you can investigate?
Okay, so you think I should do what you're pitching instead is like this is it's Serial, but I'm like investigating some sort of like survivor related thing, did Brian Heidick do blah blah blah, or somebody you know, something like that.
No, I like the idea of the dinner party better, the murder mystery.
All right, well, we could workshop that. I feel like this is a very tepid response.
No, I like the idea of the murder mystery. I think that'd be good. I think we should do that.
Okay. Well, we could talk more about this. All right. So, let's.
A lot of costumes.
Yeah. But again, I don't know if we really need to have the dinner party. It might just be the story of it.
Of no, I feel party. Like you have to have the dinner party. Because you're gonna have to have people giving confessionals about all this, right?
Oh, so like, I need, but I don't have to go to it.
No, it's gonna be everybody's memory. So of what maybe happened.
Like somebody could just set up the dinner party in New York, and then I could just like hear about what happened from everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I like that more.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Andy Pfeiffer wants to know, Sophie, what do you think about the prospect for returning for another go? Would you do it again under any circumstance? And who would you like to play with? I feel like this is something that we don't talk about a lot of the prospects of you.
I got it out. Sorry.
You got it out. Okay.
Yeah, I got it out. We're good.
It's a good omen.
Would I go back? Would I want to go back? Would I ever be asked back? All that stuff?
Is yes.
That
asking? Yes.
I think, I don't know. I go up and down on this. I think, obviously, if I was asked and the time was right and I didn't have to sacrifice much of my life, I think I would go back because I love Survivor and it's awesome. I think I would want to get to a point before I went back where I didn't have any expectations out of the whole scenario. I think there's also like a huge like post-Survivor, you know, mental mindfuck thing that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as much as you think that wouldn't happen the second time, I think I'd be nervous that it would happen, you
yeah.
know? But sure, I think that if I didn't have to sacrifice some huge, you know, so it's just been the last couple of years with med school, there's not really time to do stuff to go on reality TV much, but
yeah, I think you'd be good again. I think you'd yeah. have a shot to win. I don't feel like people would be coming in like, oh, we got to get rid of Sophie. And I think you'd be good in the challenges. I think you'd have a real shot to go far. I'm not trying to jinx you or anything, but I do. I think that you would be, that you might be my pick in that season.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to play again. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be good. I think it would be good. And especially now you're tight with Jeff. He knows your name now, right?
Exactly.
He doesn't just call you winner.
No, but I think I would request that he called me winner. Especially in an all winners season. I would be like, Jeff, can you call me winner?
You would be
how
like
how great would that be?
you would be like Cochran the first day of Survivor South Pacific.
Exactly. I would just be like Cochran. And Richard Hatch would be pissed because he'd be like, oh, no, I'm the winner. All the other winners would be so pissed that I got to be called the winner.
What was your reaction when Cochran said in front of everybody, like, Jeff, could you please refer to me as Cochran?
I think I wasn't surprised. I remember the main thing I remember from those first days of Survivor was that I went in assuming that everybody was going to be this super fan and they were all going to know how to canoe and paddle and make fire and they were all going to be super hardcore strategy because that was such the mindset that I was in. So I remember not really being that surprised that this kid, you know, was making references to old Survivors and was speaking to Jeff boldly because I went in with such a low, like I was so worried about getting voted out first and worried that everybody's going to be better than me. But now looking back, I realized that, you know, half of them had no idea what the hell they were doing.
Yeah. So did that endear Cochran to you at that time?
No, I think that it was still an eye roll. I think it started with an eye roll and ended with an eye roll.
So it went full circle.
Full circle. I love Cochran.
Yes. No, we love Cochran. How about this? This is a good question. I recently had Brian Corydon on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Brian Corydon became the first person ever from Survivor Guatemala to appear on Rob as a podcast. And so, in one of the things we talked about was what was going to happen in Survivor Wine versus Cheese. And
right.
I believe you came, I believe, according to Jessica Frey, what is your response to Brian saying that you would be fourth place in Survivor Wine versus Cheese? I thought you actually finished in the final three, but didn't get the votes.
Huh. Well, I think that's more likely that I would finish in the final three and not get the votes and finish in fourth place. I mean, but honestly, what does Brian Corydon know about Survivor?
He's a super fan. He's watched every season.
Super fan. He's watched every season. Okay, so Brian Corydon is writing a fanfic?
No. I asked him for the pecking order of how would Survivor Wine versus Cheese go. I believe you were in the final three with him and Courtney, and he ultimately was the best person.
I was haven't, because Brian emailed us all. Brian emailed me warning me that this was coming out.
Okay, so what? You weren't in the final three? I forget who was in the final three.
No, it was Courtney and Brian and Eliza.
Oh, Eliza. That's right. Yeah.
No, this is causing huge problems in the Wise versus She's Alliance.
Yes. Okay, so you were out of the... I forgot about Eliza in the final three.
I'm out at four and I'm pissed.
Yes, you're in the Rick spot. And they told you they were going to... They didn't even blindside you. They told you it was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. You know what, though? I don't mind. I think that Eliza has enough confidence already. I'm glad that Brian is gaining some self-confidence. I feel like, you know, I want those three to believe that they'll get to the final three, because I think that's going to be, it was my, you know, strategy in the season going in the first season. It'll be my strategy in Wine versus Cheese to be overlooked.
Who did you vote for in the final three, Brian, Eliza, or Courtney?
I voted for Courtney. You know, I think she tried to convince us not to vote for her, but we,
it's very endearing.
Yeah.
All right. So now, just now that we've set up Survivor Wine versus Cheese, Jorge Alvarado wants to know, if your main ally was just blindsided on Survivor Wine versus Cheese, like Natalie in this episode, what would your next move be? So who is your tightest ally in Wine versus Cheese?
I'm going to say I think Brian Cordon was my tightest ally.
Oh, well, he didn't get voted out. He won the season.
So maybe who got voted out before me?
Steven.
Steven. Steven was my tightest alliance. So what do I do?
Yeah, what do you do now? How do you, where do you go from here?
Man. I mean, I think I snuggle up to, I think I always snuggle up to Brian Cordon. Or I just create a huge fit and burn down the camp, right?
I think so. That's the move.
Wait, maybe this should be the next extracurricular. Maybe we should have a Survivor Wine and Cheese where we actually go camping, or not even camping. We just do like a weekend of Wine versus Cheese Survivor, like they do up in Maine with Bob Crowley.
Yeah.
We'll do it at some bar.
Yeah. So it would be all of the New York Survivors are actually going to play Survivor against each other.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big idea.
That would be so epic. We could do it in Central Park.
That would be Survivor Central Park. That would be even better. Let's see. Let me go to another question. Okay. How about a question about your edit? You ready to tackle this?
Okay.
Tim Sears says, some people say you got a bad edit in Survivor South Pacific. What do you think about this? And what do you think about anyone who could be a winner who got a bad edit or little airtime in terms of people? You had such big personalities in Coach and Cochran and Ozzy and people like that in your season. You were one of the people that were more under the radar. Do you think that... should we be looking, expanding our view of what a quote unquote winner edit is?
I think we should be. I can't really remember the last couple seasons. I mean, Tony kind of had a winner's edit. But I feel like this season, especially maybe last season too, there's been a huge shift in the way they're editing this show. I mean, that Jeremy boot, that would have never happened a couple seasons ago. They would have never taken that out of nowhere. It used to be the first person who has a confessional in the season is, you know, in the episode is going home that night. The person who says, oh, I'm worried, or oh, I'm not worried. Like, you could really call it. And I feel like the editing has changed to be a little more like Serial, a little bit more of a murder mystery, with cliffhangers. It's so much more enjoyable to watch, I think, than in seasons past. And I don't know yet if that's going to transform into a difference in the winner's edit, because the winner's edit is different from like surprising someone in the actual episode, right? Winner's edit is all about, you know, having them talk about their dead grandmother or whatever it is.
Well, the one guy who talked about his dead grandmother didn't win.
Right. So dead father, you know, it's building some kind of investment in the character that's positive. But I would say that I would anticipate this season not having a winner's edit, right? Because the two people who had winner's edits are gone. Josh and Jeremy are gone. Mm-hmm. I feel like this season is so much less about the arc of the season and more about the individual episodes. And I really like it. Each episode is good on its own. And yet as a whole, you know, I'm not interested in the arc of the season. I actually prefer that.
Are you down on this season like a lot of people?
I don't think I'm down on it because I'm just happy that Survivor is still on the air. But I don't get excitement thinking about the future in a way I did with the Cagayan, which I'm sure has made for a very interesting podcast.
Yes.
But I find myself enjoying the episodes, right? I'm blindsided each time. The challenges are good. They're, all the great Survivor elements are in there. But I think that the story of the season and the cast of characters is not as strong as it has been.
Yeah. I mean, I think that while the season overall, most people would say it's been a down season, I don't think there's been one episode where we've come on and be like, we have nothing to talk about. This is so boring. You know, there's been things that were like, the quit was the one week where it was like people were really frustrated, but that was really the start of like the sort of this craziness of the post-merge game. So yeah. You know, had that episode happened pre-merge, then maybe there would that might have been the total low point. But outside of that, you know, it's been not the best season, but it hasn't been
it's not one world.
Yeah. But at least, you know, One World sort of had Tarzan, where we spent a lot of time. That was like between Redemption Island and then in One World, where the two seasons where it was sort of predictable, where you had Kim and you had Boston Rob. We spent so much time talking about Phillip's antics that season. And then we spent so much time talking about Tarzan's antics this season or that season. And we don't have a character nearly as big as either of those two people.
I was going to say, we're not invested in the character. There's not like a thread that, you know, goes between the episodes that we want to follow. I feel like each episode takes us on this different arc, this different story.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to season 30.
Yes. Should be very fun. Big anniversary. Clayton Holmes Jr. wants to say, hi, Sophie. Do you think it should be against the rules to go through another player's bag? If Survivor allows Reed to go through Keith's bag and steal his hidden immunity idol clue, then what's next? Stealing the actual hidden immunity idol? When is enough enough?
No, I don't think so. I think that the most important part of Survivor is that everybody knows what the ground rules are. And I think the less rules, the better. Because once you start having rules, I think that's when you start saying, you know, well, then why can't we do this? And if somebody's going to eat all the ice, I think it's better to try to do no rules. I think that Keith made a big mistake by leaving that in his bag. When you're on Survivor, you know, looking through somebody else's bag in the real life, you feel like that's a huge crime. But on Survivor, there's so little stuff out there. There's no personal space. I don't really think that was a huge deal or a huge invasion of privacy. No rules.
Okay. Very interesting. So how about in terms of Survivor South Pacific, did anybody ever go through anybody else's bag?
Trying to remember. I don't think so. No, maybe I have some weird memory of maybe with something to do with Edna, but no, I don't think so. I don't think anybody ever went through someone's bag. Okay. We had a lot of other things with like stealing coconuts and all that stuff. And I'm always very, and I was during my season and I still am, very like kind of touchy about the food. And I always feel like there's things that are necessary to do on Survivor. And I feel like I talked about this on Tyson's season, where I just feel like, I guess I was just so hungry. I thought that stealing food, or what Julie did, stealing that trail mix, not sharing, to me, that is not strategy. I don't care if you can claim that it's going to help you in the next challenge. People are like, there's actual suffering that's going on in Survivor. And I think that people who are able to steal food, or to eat more than other people, that kind of thing, I think that really reflects on their character. And that's just me. I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong, but it's something
off
that I know that it just pisses me off. I know that I would feel guilty doing it. I got pissed when people did it on my season. And I think that it's a line that doesn't need to be crossed to win the season. Okay. Nobody's going to be like, oh, dude, you were so awesome. You stole all of our food. What great strategy. You know, here's $1 million.
Matt Rubio wants to know, based on the hottest castaway poll CBS put up, who would win on the season Survivor: Hot Island?
I glance at this. I'm going to go with the people in my season, right? Yeah. Albert and Whitney for the win.
Really? So I have lots of questions about Albert and Whitney, about if you watch them on The Amazing Race. Are you in the Albert and Whitney inner circle?
You mean Keith and Whitney inner circle?
I was the Keith and Whitney inner circle.
I've seen Whitney a couple of times since she's
yeah.
I'm fans of Keith and Whitney. I think it's wonderful that they found love on Survivor. How great is that?
On The Amazing Race, they didn't do an exit interview with me.
I did hear about that.
Yes.
I don't know.
All right. So you're endorsing.
Maybe their phone blinds were down.
Maybe. You're endorsing Albert for hottest guy, and you're endorsing Whitney for hottest woman?
Definitely.
Okay. Do you have a second choice?
No.
No.
These are far and away.
Are you encouraging people to go vote for Survivor South Pacific for hottest season?
Yeah, I voted like 6 times already for that.
Really? Did you?
I'm also encouraging an Abby Maria Gomez. Gomez.
You want her to be a write-in for hottest
write-in.
Female?
Because I saw she posted something on Facebook, and I feel like, yeah.
She's always trying to work that write-in
angle. Give her the vote.
Well, it was also a snub for Pete Bro. The great Pete Yerkowski from Survivor Philippines, not even nominated for hottest guy when he's in the running for Price is Right, hottest spokesmodel.
I mean, those hottest things are bullshit, right? Are you on it?
No.
I'm not on it.
Sophie, I wasn't in the top 200.
No, well, then we know it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know where they got these names from.
It's just like, I don't know. I feel like an Upworthy would do a really good one of those kind of clickbaity things about, you know, society's standards of beauty.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, yeah, we could do something on that.
Okay. All right, Sophie, I know you got to go play soccer soon. Let me see if I have any other questions for you.
Sorry, this podcast seems so like muffled in my brain. I feel like it's because of this contact issue.
I know, you have to play through the pain.
No.
Josh Johnson wants to know, who's your favorite country singer, Baylor or Whitney?
Oh, Whitney. Oh, my God. Although I thought Baylor's music video was cool. Like, it was so disconnected to the lyrics of the song. Like, it's so over my head.
It was very literal.
Yeah.
It's a very literal situation. All right, last question, Sophie. Gavin Costello wants to know, Sophie, what's the hardest thing you've ever done with your feet?
Oh, I can do the coolest thing with my feet. And it's, well, when I first tried, it was really hard. And then I practiced and practiced, and now I'm really good at it. I can. Oh, this isn't a video. Damn it.
Oh, I can take. I
have a video of it. Oh my God. I'll send you a video.
Send me the video of this. What are you going to do?
I can take. If I take my shoes off, my socks off, and you put your feet out straight or whatever, I can then wiggle my pinky toes back and forth without moving the rest of my toes.
Okay. Let's see it.
It's really awesome. Yeah. I'll send you the video.
Send me the video.
It's incredible. Like, people don't have that kind of, you know, muscle, like separate. You know, people don't have like the connections that I have in my feet between the nerves and the muscles.
Okay.
I can individually move my toes.
All right. So Sophie, send us that video and we'll post it on the website. definitely. Is that like a YouTube video or you have to send me an actual file?
I think I vined it when I had a vine back in the day.
Okay. So I have to go look for it.
No, I'll find it.
All right, send it to me. All right. Sophie, are you accepting submissions if I'm giving you green light power for the podcast, are you accepting submissions? Like, do you want people to send you the ideas?
Yeah, that's fine. Send me the ideas. I'll probably just make them bigger. I'll elevate
the
ideas.
Yeah, you'll have like a stack of like scripts now piling up on your desk. Yeah. And then
how it is at the Dr. Oz show. I just, you know, it's always like bigger. We need it to be bigger. So I make the pimple bigger.
Yeah. If we end up doing a podcast about yeast infections, I'm out.
I'm your girl.
I'm out. All right. So send Sophie your ideas at Sophie G. Clark on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Big G.
Big G. Anything else? What else are you doing?
I think that's about it. Yeah.
Okay. Watch Sophie weekdays on Dr. Oz as well.
Like, I am doing something else right now, but I don't remember what it is.
Intramural soccer. Thursday nights.
Yeah.
New York. And I can't wait to talk to you during Survivor 30, Sophie.
This was fun, Rob.
Always. All right. And well, let's figure out what the next thing is going to be.
Okay. I think the next thing could be the Family Feud March Madness. Let's do the murder mystery before that.
All right. Well, let's do something for the Survivor offseason. You got to strike when the iron is hot. January. We need something for January.
Well, we can do January Madness.
January Madness. Okay. Last year, I think we talked about doing the Jack and Jill movie cast in January.
Oh, that'd be awesome too.
All right. We got to pick one thing and stick with it.
I know. Whenever Dominique is five, we're going to do our best.
Yes. Whenever Dominique is up to it. All right. All right, Sophie, take care, okay?
Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Sophie Clark back here on Rob Has a Podcast. Now, as I promise, this is a full-fledged Clark cast. And so we are very lucky because sitting with me, behind me, the entire time, not saying a single word and being completely still throughout the whole show, even when Sophie was having her medical emergency, we greatly appreciate it. Here he is, the man that you can always count on from the Big Brother International Rehap-Ups and the post-show recap of Once Upon a Time. Please welcome in the Tabulator, Kurt Clark.
Being here is my utopia, Rob.
Yes, hit it. No, I don't have it ready.
Okay.
I don't have it ready. You gotta. So much show prep that goes on, Kurt. I didn't know we were going to play the utopia cue.
We need to move on.
Yes. Yes. Kurt, I saw that you were tweeting with polyamorous Dedeker this past week.
I got a tweet from her saying that she loved our podcast. I have a feeling there's many.
She listened to it.
That's what she said. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know she listened to it. I thought that she was sort of like just like a setup. Like, so like, oh yeah, whatever. I'll talk to anybody.
Yeah. She said, yeah, she said that she loved, but I have a feeling there's many podcasts she loves.
Yes.
So
she's poly podcasterous.
Yes.
So,
but no, that was a nice of her to reach out. Cause I know there were some tweets going out to her like immediately after the show. And I think that typical decompression time that people probably go through when they're off one of those live shows. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we'll see. Like, I feel what I had said just inside baseball was, I don't know if there was enough there with Dedeker for a dedicated one podcast with just like an interview with Dedeker. If we got like a couple people together, I feel like a Utopia reunion, I think I'd be down for that.
Right.
I don't know how much. I mean, other than I feel like the conversation with Dedeker would quickly devolve into like, all right, so let's talk about this polyamory.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a lot like 55 minutes on that and like 5 minutes on Utopia.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if we want to devolve into that. But anyway.
Yeah.
So Kurt Clark, he's on Twitter at Kurt Clark. And yep. And sometimes the reality stars are jumping into the boat.
Occasionally.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so we're gonna get to taking your voicemails and talking about all the social media with Kurt. Very nice to have Kurt here in person. How are you enjoying California?
Oh, and much better than Chicago right now due to the weather. It was starting to really flurry as I was leaving. Haven't seen the new studio until now. I'm surprised you fit the hot tub in here. It's quite wow. Very spacious.
Well, you were here for Miss Survivor back in January, Mr. and Miss Survivor. And can you believe it's almost time to do it again?
Oh, I know. I've already been thinking about how we're going to make sure that what are the things that I can clarify in the wording? These are the things the tabulator asks himself. How can I make the questions clear?
Yes.
it's thrill a minute.
And one of the questions that came up recently was, should Julie be eligible for Miss Survivor? And I feel like the results were sort of, people didn't have super strong feelings. I think about 60% or so of voters said she shouldn't be allowed. I didn't think that was a mandate. Julie should not be allowed.
Yeah, and I think I listened to that podcast about a week after it was announced, and I was like, whoa, look. The official stance of the tabulator is, if you don't want her to win, don't vote for her. She's one of, 18, 20 females from 2014.
Right.
If you don't want her to win, don't vote for her. And if there is, for some reason, enough of a rallying in the audience that she makes the top three, she makes the top three. But
yeah,
she won't make the top three.
I think that we would need to step in, like, hypothetically speaking, like, I could see there being something like, let's say it was a situation a la like a Frankie Grande on Big Brother, where let's say we had a survivor and, you know, it was Taylor Swift's nephew. Or I don't know. Taylor Swift's nephew would probably be like one. Taylor Swift's uncle was on Survivor and he quit and everybody was mad at him. But we thought that like Taylor Swift was going to say, everybody vote for my uncle to win Mr. Survivor. We should be so lucky. And we would have to tell this guy, hey, shake it off. You are not eligible for Mr. Survivor, you quitting jerk.
Yes. I'll keep my eye on the numbers again. I make sure I can keep an eye on the hinky votes and make sure that nothing untoward happens. But You know, she may break the top 10, but we'll see what happens. I think we got some strong contenders this year for Miss Survivor.
We'll see. Dirty Underwear Nuts campaigning could help.
Yes.
Okay. Kurt, so we want to jump into the voicemails, but let me ask you about last night's episode. What was your take on this vote? We've heard from myself, from Sophie, from Steven now. What was your take on the John and Jacqueline turning against Jeremy?
You know, I was listening to the Know It Alls podcast on the drive over here, and I, like you, was a bit surprised that Steven was so is bullish on
right.
John's chances
right.
and John's move, because I was thinking immediately, even going up to it, I was like, okay, if they, I think, you know, I was watching with some friends and we paused to say, if they flip, then Natalie's, I said, if any member of a pair, if any of those six, Baylor and Missy, John and Jacqueline, Natalie and Jeremy, if any of them get turned on, mm-hmm. any of them, even if it was John, then Jacqueline would switch to the other, remaining four people. And likewise, Natalie, you know, could very well flip. So I didn't think the chances were good, but I didn't realize at the time that Reed had joined them in voting for Jeremy.
Yes.
And that Reed had received a couple of votes from his own alliance. So I'm curious where things stand and what Reed is actually going to do, because he's kind of in the catbird seat a little bit now in terms of having some choices to make.
So that was the game changer for you when you realized that Reed was voting with them, and so now yeah. you like the move?
I still don't like the move, but I think that I like the move for Reed. I still don't think I necessarily think it bodes well for John and Jacqueline.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure we will cover that quite a bit here in your voicemails. Of course, they come in every week. robinswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Of course, before we get to the voicemails, I just want to take a moment and thank everybody who has already started doing some of this holiday shopping. Kurt, I know it is a lot. A lot to do in the next couple of weeks. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it myself, but I do appreciate everybody who's using our links for Amazon.com. We really appreciate it, especially this time of year. robhaswebsite.com/Amazon in the US and our new link in Canada, Kurt. robhaswebsite.com/AmazonCA.
Yeah, neighbors to the north finally get in on the action.
They can get in on the action, and they too can help support Rob's podcast. Black Friday Deals Week is happening, Kurt. Have you ever gone out and done anything for Black Friday?
No.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing something for Black Friday that are the TV downstairs. Is not where, yeah. You catch that on the way in?
No, I missed it.
Oh, yeah. It works, but we have like a big, like a vertical bar down the center of the screen.
I did see that.
Yes.
And I thought that was like an
picture
artifact.
Picture.
I thought that was like an artifact of the show that you're watching. Like, oh, there's some doing some sort of split screen thing.
No. Luckily, the baby doesn't mind. But yeah, the TV a couple of weeks ago just like went out. And I had the repairman come and he's like, yeah, it's broken.
Daddy ain't happy.
Yes. Yes. I will be on Amazon.com soon buying a new TV, because Mickey Mouse Clubhouse with a big line through it isn't the same. All right. So Dominic is very upset. In reality, like, he's the only one that really watches it, and he doesn't mind too much.
He's once you get it fixed, he's gonna be wondering what happened to the.
Yeah,
big,
where's the?
That's
where's
his
the
favorite.
Bar?
That's his favorite character.
Okay. All right. So let's jump into it and let's start. I have so many voicemails here today for you, Kurt. Let's start with Danny.
Hi everyone, this is Danny from Chile calling. I have a two-part question regarding Jeremy's Ponderosa video. First of all, Rob, during the Know It Alls last night, you said this was a bad move for John and Jacqueline. However, in his video, Jeremy said he was planning to get rid of them soon. Does this change your opinion on the move? Thank you, bye.
Okay, thank you, Danny. Okay, so this is interesting because, you know, last night, you, of course, Know It Alls is like right after the episode. And then we get time, we get some more information, we get to sort of think about things. I did watch Jeremy's Ponderosa videos, which were interesting. I talked to Jeremy himself also this morning, and I really wanted to get to the bottom of this, because for me, the decision of is this a good move or not for John and Jacqueline, and I'm fluid in my opinion. I'm not going to be like, I'm 100% like, you know, when new information comes to light, I reserve the right to change my opinion. So I wanted to know from Jeremy, if he was going after John and Jacqueline? And if so, was he going to take them out before the final six? Because I think that would be the tell for me. And Jeremy sort of, he said that he was going after them, and he said he was probably going to go after Jacqueline, not John. And he said he was going to do it soon, but not that soon. So he made it sound almost like around like final seven or so. He wanted to get rid of Keith and Reed first. So that muddies it for me.
Right. And I think, you know, you and talk about the Ponderosa video, that's like right after he was booted out. So he's probably really still fresh in his mind, and he may be accelerating things mentally in his own game timeline. And so I was thinking just like you that it sounded like when your interview with him, he was actually, it was going to be a few weeks down the road. If John wanted to flip on Jeremy, it sounded like there was potentially time to do it without him being Jeremy's next target.
Yeah. For me, I still wouldn't have done the move even with that information, just because I think that you put yourself in a position where has John increased the chances that he is voted out in the next couple of votes? I think he has. So here's the answer for me. So if John and Jacqueline are both still in the game at final six, then thumbs up. They made the right move. If one of them, if John goes out before the final six, then thumbs down. It was a bad move. And ultimately, let's see. And if you're John and Jacqueline, the truth is one of them has to win the game. What, you know, they're a couple. There's two of them. One of them has to win. They're getting married. They're engaged. They are, one of them needs to win. It doesn't matter who. One of them needs to come home with that $1 million for this trip to be a success. Did they increase the chances or decrease the chances that one of them was coming home with that money?
It feels to me like they decreased the chances.
Decreased the chances.
To me, that's what it feels like.
I think that John doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
I think Jacqueline still has a chance to win the game.
If it turns out that Natalie, and I was saying earlier that, you know, maybe Reed is with them, because the fact that Reed joined them in the vote for Jeremy almost seems like there was a discussion we didn't see that, hey, we're going to take out Jeremy, Reed, come in with us. It almost seems like something happened there that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if there may be a chance then for Jacqueline in that case. But if Natalie truly flips and there's a large number, Jacqueline's not inside that. So it's a little bit like last season where we were wondering, was Cass's decision to flip a smart one? Was Tony's decision to take out LJ a smart one? Or did they just screw themselves? Well, it was let's wait and see what happens over the next three or so episodes. And if they're still there, then it wasn't necessarily that bad of a move. And it turned out they were still there.
And I wonder if the Reed thing happened because of the finding the immunity idol in Keith's bag, where he came and brought it to Missy. And then that was then he endeared himself. And it sounded like, from what Jeremy was saying in my exit interview with him, it sounded like that happened while he was on Exile Island. Yeah. And whereas in the episode, it made it seem like it happened like right before Tribal Council.
Yeah, true.
So interesting. It'll be, you know, we'll get our answers. We will know at the end of the day if this is a better move, yes or no. We'll know who the best know-it-all is, me or Steven, based on our bet last night. So it will be something that's really fun to watch the rest of the way. Okay, let's take a question. This came up from a lot of people in the voicemail. I'm going to play this one. I think this is from Shane Gallagher, and has a question about the edit. Lots of people always want us to talk more about the edit. Here's an edit question.
Hey, Rob and Kurt. It's Shane Gallagher from Dublin. I have a question about the edit. Last night, we saw a very misleading edit where it was very unexpected that Jeremy was voted off a tribal. I was wondering if you prefer an edit where we see a lot of the conversations about what is really going to happen at Tribal, and we can easily predict who will be voted off that night, as opposed to what happened last night, where we see very little of the discussions leading up to the blind side, and we are very shocked at the outcome. Love to hear your thoughts, and I just want to say I thought last night's episode was massive. Thank you. Bye.
Massive.
That's Trevor from Big Brother Australia.
Yeah,
that's the Australian version of "This is huge. This is massive."
Okay. All right. So, Kurt, a lot of people wondered with this last night. Did the Survivor editors like trick us last night, or was this something that just came up and there wasn't a lot of footage about? Because people are of two minds. Some people said, was this, I saw a lot of threads about this, like on message boards and on Reddit today. Was this a fantastically edited episode or a badly edited episode?
I don't think it was a complete blindside in terms of, whoa, where did those votes come from? Because we did see John musing about taking out Jeremy, and we did see him talking to Muffin about it. I think just because there were those little hints, I was personally actually fine with it. I didn't feel like that was like, oh my gosh, where did that come from? I felt a little bit more like that in terms of, you know, Josh's vote for Baylor at the very beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. To me, that was, I think, you know, a little bit of like, worse editing, but there wasn't really anybody for Josh to talk to about that. So I was fine with the edit for this one.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because the information was there, but it wasn't something that I was even suspecting or that was on my radar. I feel like it was one of those things where it was like there was just enough to make you say like, oh, OK, I see what happened there. And so and there's certainly been times before, like when Tony voted out Trish last season, notably where we kids were like, hey, what the hell happened? You know, it's interesting. And I think we want to be sort of on the edge of our seat. We don't want to sit there and say, oh my God, like we know this is coming. I think it was something where it came up sort of like right. I mean, it came up towards the end of the episode cycle. So there weren't a lot of interviews on it. I mean, at least when I was on Survivor, in your 3-day episode cycle, the episode cycles are all wonky because there's 18 players and whatever, and it's not a 3-day interval, but you'd have a reward challenge on the first day, and then on the day in the middle of the 3-day episode cycle, you would do all your interviews about what you're thinking about the vote and stuff like that, and then you'd have the third day of the where you'd go to your challenge and then go to tribal council ultimately. Jeremy's at Exile Island until the immunity challenge. And then he comes back, and when he comes back, he's asking John about the immunity idol. So you would imagine, you know, tribal council is, you know, a couple hours away, is looming, and he's having that conversation with him. So in the course of a couple of hours, this comes up. They talk to Missy. So there's not a lot of, like, footage from the interviews in this cycle about that. So it is going to be more of a blindside because it's something that's not being talked about.
Right. I mean, they spent a lot of time in the previews and on the episode about the whole... Reed searching through Keith's bag, which had really ultimately nothing to do with Jeremy going home. It was really Jeremy's, for me, it was Jeremy's reaction to John that got the ball rolling. I think even on the podcast last night with Steven, you didn't think it was necessary that he necessarily overplayed how he was approaching John about it. I thought maybe he did.
Yeah.
It was enough to plant a seed of doubt in John's mind about what Jeremy was thinking, and that got the ball rolling.
Yeah, we talked about this with Sophie, too, and he probably didn't need to have that conversation.
Right.
Like, he didn't need to call John to the witness stand. He could have just been comfortable enough with, like, I know he's lying to me, but I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
And I think that's probably a good thing. Look, let me get out my Boston Rob, my BR rule book, and... let's see. Do we need to add to this BR rule book here of like, if you know somebody's lying, you don't need to call them out.
And for the record, he literally did reach behind him and grab the book. This is not audio drama here.
Yes.
The book is in front of us.
Page 67. Never tell her she looks fine. That is a good one. How do I look? She asks. And you, tired and hungry from waiting for her answer with one word, fine. Wrong answer. All right. So if you know somebody's lying, if you know someone is lying, keep it quiet.
Now, is there other blank pages on the back for you to add your own, or are you just writing on the back leaf? Oh, there are. Oh, yeah. Add your own.
Boston Rob hooks you up.
Yeah.
He says, hey, you know, I'm going to leave a couple pages blank. You write your own rules, too.
I'm kind of tipping my hand that I have not bought the BR rules by asking these questions.
Yes. Okay. Smarten up, Kurt. Smarten up. Okay. Let's take another question, and let's go to... Colin in Montreal. Let's go north of the border to our Canadian friends. And a big part of the Rob is a Podcast audience is Canadian.
We love America's hat.
It's a tundra hat.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Colin.
Hi, Rob. Colin from Montreal here. I wanted to ask you the question of whether or not last night's blindside and other similar alliance jumping moves we've seen this season is a direct result of this cast seeing what Tony did last season. And will this be what Tony's lasting impact on the game of Survivor is? Complete and utter chaos.
All right. So is last night's vote the lasting result of the Vlachos effect? What do you think?
I think that might be fan fiction.
Sorry. You threw me off. Hold on.
You're like, we got to that too early.
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
Fan fiction. Yes.
And I only say that because I don't. John has not been playing a very Tony-like game up to this point. I don't think he's suddenly deciding to do that now. And because we saw he was originally wanted to vote with he originally was going to vote with Reed. With Josh and Reed. He got, you know, Jacqueline helped him change his mind, and he's going back to what he originally thought. He said at the beginning that he was kind of second guessing that. He didn't think he had done the right thing, and he felt bad about it.
Yeah. And as we all know, Tony's lasting legacy on the game is this.
This is huge. I needed this. Ooh. 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 Ooh.
I forgot how long that is.
So typically I listen to the podcast at double speed because there's just like so much content out there. Listening to that clip at double speed when he's kind of like, whinnying. It sounds like a Mogwai from Gremlins, like the little purring, cooing sound that they make. It's very disturbing.
He's like Gizmo.
Exactly, exactly.
Look, never feed me after midnight. Don't let me get wet in the water. And no sunlight.
No direct sunlight.
Bright light. But as for I don't think that this has to do with Tony's lasting impact. You know, we talked about before the season if these people were going to come in playing 100 miles an hour like Tony from the start. And I don't think we've really seen that. It's funny in his secret scenes, Jeremy is talking about how he's the anti-Tony because he couldn't find an idol. He wanted his moment to say, this is huge, and he never was able to find the idol. And so I don't think that this was a Tony factor. I don't think that Tony's making the players swap alliances more.
Right. And I think we had, like you said, lightning in a bottle with Tony. And it's even people who have watched the show in the past will see that and I think recognize it's not necessarily a game that can be repeated and copied successfully.
Right. But Tony, I think, was the culmination of the couple of years of pushing from survivors, whether it's, you know, between production, between Jeff, between the fans, between everything. Everything is like trying to pressure the players to make big moves. Got to make big moves. So I think there is pressure on people out there to keep it exciting. Even if it's not in your best interest. And so was Tony the culmination of that? Or like what came first? The llama or the egg?
I don't think Tony was created in a vacuum. Like I said, it's the result of a long series of fortunate events.
Yeah. I mean, when Sierra is, you know, picking rocks and Jeff Probst is standing up and like, now that's how you play the game. Now, Tony had already played his game at the time that's even happening. But it's just like a lot of pressure from, you know, make big moves.
Yeah. I was glad because like I'd say yesterday was I think there's a distinction between making smart moves and making big moves. Like making smart moves get you applause from a strategic perspective. Making big moves typically is what we see last night. And you're wondering what the hell did that person do that for?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, though, to see. I think what you said with Sierra, with Tony, people may be more mindful of their opportunities to make a move that is lasting, but it's probably something that's lasting and yet true to who they are.
Yeah, I think that the big moves are definitely considered much more than they ever were before in the past.
Yeah,
which is fun, which is good for podcasting, and not as good for the players, but good for what we do.
Good TV.
All right, as we all know, that Rob has a planet, and there we have listeners from all over the globe. We've already heard from Ireland today. We've already heard from South America. Let's check in with the Philippines. This is Rob from the Philippines.
Hi, Rob. Mabuhay. This is Robert, one of your biggest fans and an avid podcast listener from the Philippines. Just would like to know what you think on how Missy compares to that of the greatest older women survivor castaways. I am thinking more specifically how she compares to that of to the likes of Tina Wesson, Mad Dog, and Teacher Wanda of Survivor Palau. Hope to hear from you soon, Rob. Bye.
All right, Kurt. So how does Missy compare to the greatest female players of all time? Tina Wesson, Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey, and Wanda from Survivor Palau. So where would you rank her in the on the Mount Rushmore of older female players?
Golly. It remains to be seen. Tina won. Wanda didn't.
Are you putting her up there with Wanda, Mad Dog, and Tina?
She's one of the more memorable older female players we've had of late.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously past Mad Dog, who was pre-jury. Mm-hmm. Mad Dog undateable. we've got Wanda, who is out pre-game.
Yeah.
But you've got people. I think she did, Laura Bonham, who was semi-memorable as a player because she was, I think, abandoned by or separated from Rupert so early.
Laura Bonham?
Yes, Bonham.
Okay.
Sorry. I'd say...
That's a memorable player for you?
I'm trying to think of people I'm remembering who are older females who've played recently.
Yeah.
And it's...
I mean, I think that you probably have to go back. Denise from the Philippines, I think that's probably a really good one.
Yes.
She's interesting, though, Missy, in that, I am having a hard time in my mind. Like, she's like the super alpha female soccer mom. She's a cheerleading mom. But, I don't know. That's not how I saw Denise. Like, Denise isn't like, domineering. And so I feel like that players that come to mind would be like a Sherry. And traditionally, these are the kind of people that end up in the end of the game with getting no votes, like getting shut out in the finals.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to
I shouldn't say traditionally. It hasn't happened that many times.
But the hard time I'm having is like with a Tina and with a Denise. If you look at Tina's.
What about Mad Dog?
I'll loop back on that. But I think Denise and Tina got to play their own games in their original seasons.
Yeah.
And you got to see Tina figure out, okay, she was going to align with Colby and Keith. And you got to see Denise's relationship with Malcolm. Here, we're really seeing Missy as a joint, element with Baylor. I think prior to her being joined back up with Baylor, she was kind of seen on her tribe, on the Hanapu tribe, as kind of the person who really only showed up to console people. When Natalie saw that Nadia was voted out, she consoled Natalie. She consoled Julie when she was, crying about how John was treated at the challenge. So until she got back with Baylor, she was really kind of in the background. And now we see her primarily playing the game in context with her daughter. So it's hard for me to compare her to all of these people we've been talking about because she's so strongly linked to someone, to her loved one. So I don't,
Yes. I said with Otis last week, I think it was in that show, that I felt like Laura Moret 1.0, I think, is probably a good person to compare Missy to.
I can buy that. I'll co-sign that.
Co-sign.
There we go.
What about in terms of Wanda?
I'm gonna give it a bit more clout to Missy. We haven't heard her sing.
Yes. Better or worse, Muffin or Wanda?
Muffin.
Do you know the Muffin Man? The Muffin Man. The Muffin Man. Yes. All right. Maybe they could. Could Missy give Wanda cheerleading lessons for free?
I don't know if Wanda needs cheerleading.
Give me an A! Give me! I don't
know. So. There's maybe a good joint venture there between the two of them. Like good cop, bad cop cheerleading lessons.
I think that would be that'd be fantastic. All right, so let's take another question here. Let's go around. Let's go to my good friend Akiva. Let's go to Akiva, and he has a question that he has been. So he has seen some things that have ruined the episode for him this week.
Hey, Rob, it's Akiva here. I heard you were cheating on me with the Rival podcast. I wanted to make sure we were still cool. Anyway, I have a question for you and the tabulator. I was watching CBS on Sunday. I was watching football, and the commercial came on and said there was going to be a huge blindside during this episode. It kind of spoiled the whole episode for me because I kind of figured Jeremy was going home. Similar to two scenes of Building Blood versus Water, when they kind of ruined the Rapture, you know, during the week, and, you know, said that something was going to happen that never happened before, everyone kind of knew that it was they were going to rocks. Last year, you really stopped you really spearheaded the campaign for the survivors to stop tweeting during the season. So I was wondering if you could maybe spearhead a new campaign to stop CBS from spoiling the episodes during the commercials during the week. Thanks.
All right, so that's Akiva, my co-host from the Seinfeld Rewatch podcast over on Post Show Recaps. He has a better microphone on the Seinfeld podcast. It's easier to hear.
Okay.
But he was watching the football, and they said, I didn't see these commercials, but they said, Big Blindside coming up on Survivor Wednesday.
Yeah, no, I saw little inside. There's a Survivor Fantasy League that I run, and as part of it, I have to seek out all the previews leading up to it to say, okay, what are the things that we can ask questions about in terms of like what are the previews we have to dip into? And I saw that preview, and I was like, I kind of hate when they do that. And for me, for somebody who's planning on watching no matter what, that's not the sort of teaser I need. I'm guessing I've been hearing left and right that this has, the season started way up here in terms of this is a pretty good season. We're talking about maybe pretty good isn't way up here, but it's up here. But of late, people say, it's just so predictable and it's just like, blah, 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 blah. And so, maybe this was an effort to reinvigorate interest from those who have waned and may have drifted away from the show. I just don't know of people who actually stop watching Survivor once they've started.
Well, that's the crux of this point where, they could run a commercial, they say, like this week on Survivor, Baylor is going home. Check it out Wednesday night on CBS. And the people that watch Survivor are still going to watch Survivor.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know, has anybody ever wasn't going to watch Survivor and then saw a commercial that said, okay, well, I have to watch this. I wonder if like in the pregame okay, that season sounds good, but I kind of feel like you're either in or you're out. I'm very interested to know like whether or not the commercials have any bearing on whether people watch the show or not. And I think the ratings have been holding steady this season. I don't think this show is like hemorrhaging viewers or anything like that. So interesting. Now, what I would suggest for Akiva and what I would suggest to any football fan that is getting these commercials ruined for them by CBS is that I have on DirecTV the Red Zone channel. And what I do is I watch the football on the Red Zone channel. They don't go to commercial, especially if you're in fantasy leagues. You just stay on that. You don't see one commercial the whole day, except for maybe a DirecTV thing. But you're not going to find anything out about Survivor. So if you stick with the Red Zone, then you don't have to worry about getting anything spoiled.
Yeah, it's yes. It's not the sort of thing that I enjoy personally seeing. But yeah, it's unfortunately it happens.
Let's go to Ariel and let's see what she has to say. Has a question for Kurt.
Hi, Robin, Kurt. This is Ariel. First off, while I, of course, am a fan of the Tabulator and Once Upon a Time PSR co-host, I am a little concerned now for the voicemail segment because that Clark curse is proving to be pretty powerful. My question is, the immunity challenge was billed as the first one of its kind. What did you think? New and innovative, or too many close-ups of gnarly feet? Of course Baylor was going to win, since there was a stick involved in this challenging situation. Hope to still hear voicemails next week. Fingers crossed. Thanks, guys.
All right.
I'd be lying if I said I was not expecting a question like this.
a Clark curse question. Okay, first off, will the Clark curse ruin the Survivor voicemail? What is the Clark curse?
For those of you who have not been listening to anything else I've been covering, pretty much if I cover a reality show, it doesn't make it to a second season, and sometimes it doesn't quite make it out of the first season gate.
Yes. But you and I have done the voicemails before, so I think we're sort of inoculated from the Clark curse. We've sort of got injected with a little dose early on, and we have built up an inoculation. What'd you think of the challenge and Baylor's win? Of course, it was a sticky situation for her.
Sticky situation.
Yes. It was a stick that she was required to put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the close-ups of the gnarly feet. I was actually hoping that there would be, I was expecting there'd be more commentary about people's feet in terms of, you know, I've got, you know, huge blister. Like, because typically at some point in the season, you always hear about all the bug bites I have or how nasty in there all my feet are. We get the you know, Tina's daughter, Katie, I think I remember we had the famous
toenail.
Scenes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm surprised that there was no commentary or around that point. The feet didn't look that bad this year. I mean, no. I'm by no means a foot fetishist. So that didn't bother me at all. I did think it was a really unique challenge. I know I was actually watching the episode with Rob's fact checker, and we were talking about the coming up, and it looked
name dropping the live tweeters.
And he had said he saw a still of it, and it looked like it was going to be an endurance challenge where people had to kind of sit there in this crouched pose. But little did he know that because it was just still, they were actually moving and transferring things with their feet. So it was actually nice. I thought it was going to be an endurance challenge, and it was a really interesting you know, kind of switch up in terms of something new.
Yeah. I thought it was okay. I'm not dying to see the feet challenge again. I think it was like interesting that they tried it. I mean, I liked that they called it the name of the challenge was The Game is Afoot, and a shout out to the great Tarzan, of course. I was going to go ahead as my Tarzan clips, but I'll defer. I'll pass on that. And so, you know, I think that's fun that they came up with. What would be another challenge? What would be a Survivor quote that you would like to hear a new challenge about?
Oh, such as The Game
yes,
is Afoot.
Yeah.
I don't think we want a gross food challenge. That was called, it was definitely poop.
that's a Robin's podcast quote.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, that wasn't from the show. I'd like to hear that in the comments. Let us know in the comments. Give us the quote, and then give us what the challenge is.
Yes.
Yes.
That would be great. It's like yes. I would like, I think maybe what Sue Hawk is like, I wouldn't stop by, it's kind of long, but I wouldn't stop by the side of the road and give you water if I saw you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
How about one, let's call it, who is this jackass? And let's go to the Aaron Lobdell quote. And it's like, they have to like have like donkeys, and they have to, I don't know what they have to do with the donkeys.
I got one.
Yes.
For when we go back to Survivor China.
Yes.
I've been bamboozled.
Okay, good. You're going to do something with bamboo?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Good. all good stuff. So let us know in the comments your idea for, give us a quote and then give us what the challenge is. And see, Miles and I can feel free to
pass that on.
dig through all of your ideas for punny Survivor challenges. All right, Kurt, let's take a question from should be a familiar voice to you. Let's take a question from Amy.
Hey, Rob, this is Amy, and I've got a question for Kurt. Kurt, which contestant this season do you think deserves to have the word strategy placed in front of their name? Thanks. Talk to you later.
All right, Kurt, it's Amy, your co-host from the International Big Brother podcast of Big Brother Australia.
Yeah, and actually be recording with Amy on that show later tonight. And just for this little background info, there's a player on Big Brother Australia who was David, who has been nicknamed Strategy Dave.
Strategy Dave, yes.
And so I would have said Strategy Josh. But if you have to go by the people who are still left in the game, I think, you know, Josh might have passed that on to Reed. Reed was scrambling and decided he knew he had to scramble and decided to scramble, unlike Brenda in her first season. And so I'd say strategy Reed. I'll go with that's his new nickname. He's the one that actually knew that he had to get things going with the whole, you know, Keith and the idol, and it ended up, you know, not being what actually caused it, but he's, I think, got himself a little bit off the radar now.
By the way, if you want to listen to Kurt talk about Strategy Dave on the Big Brother Australia podcast, you can hear all of the reality TV for Hap-Ups on the new Rob Has a Podcast app as well. There you go.
Yep.
And by the way, Kurt, I added a new sound effect to the Rob Has a Podcast app today.
What was that sound effect?
You got to go in and look for it. All right. So let's take a question from Ruben Berg.
Hi, Rob. It's Ruben here from Australia. I noticed that on this season, I think it's going to be quite likely that someone in the final tribal council is going to have a loved one who's on the jury. And this is going to be quite different to what happened last Blood and Water. So I was really keen to hear what you thought the influence of that loved one might be who's on the jury. Are they really going to be able to campaign for their loved one really hard? Are they going to be able to ask questions in final trial that's really going to benefit their loved one? Great to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
All right, this is a really interesting question for me because in the original Survivor Blood versus Water, it was Tyson, Jervis, and Monica. All their loved ones were long gone on the pre-jury trip by the time that they got there. Even when we had people going on to the jury, their loved ones were at Redemption Island. So you had, I think that Otis was the first member of the jury while Vetus was still on Redemption Island. So Vetus and Otis didn't get paired back up until they were both on the jury. We had where Laura Moret got voted out. She's going to Redemption Island, and then she doesn't see when Sierra gets voted back into the game. I think she's still in the mix up until the end. So you had people sort of like reunited on the jury, but I don't think that there was anybody in Survivor Blood versus Water that their loved one was in the game and they were on the jury.
Right. It's that's going
actually,
to
actually, I think when Tina got back in the game, I think Katie might have already been on the jury.
Yeah. Yeah, and even I think even like the bigger question is at the finale, we've never seen in the final tribal council the
yes more importantly
yeah, yeah.
yes
how will that impact things?
Because I thought it was kind of cool. It depends if you like Reed and Josh or not. If you don't like them, then this probably like was infuriating. But there was a lot of like, you know, when Jeremy got voted out, like Josh was cheering and Reed did like a wink at Josh over there, but it's just sort of interesting that it's like, hey, there's your loved one. They're kind of like in the original Blood versus Water at Redemption Island. It's like, all right, let's bring out your loved one who's in the jury. You know, here's Josh today, voted out, whatever. And so you can see your loved one. Your loved one's right there, but they don't. There's no communication.
Right. If it's like, you know, Redemption Island put on mute. You're not allowed to have that back and forth with them. But you know, whether or not it will impact things when it gets down to the finale, I don't know. I could see, for instance, if Baylor was in the finals and Missy was on the jury back at Ponderosa, Missy trying to campaign for Baylor could end up backfiring. I think it actually would be to the benefit of anybody whose partner is actually in the final three, if that ends up being the scenario, to kind of maybe keep their mouth shut and not overplay things back in Ponderosa.
Yeah, I think it could be an incredibly interesting final tribal council to the season. Let's say, hypothetically, like there's a final three and it's, you know, Reed, Baylor, and Jacqueline. Okay, the final three. You know, just throwing things out there. And so then, but when you have the other people stand up to give their questions, are they going to try to, like, you know, beat up the other two people in the final tribal council? Like, is, you know, does Josh get up there? Like, you know, Baylor, you were pretty worthless this season. And, you know, will we see that sort of thing happen? Or will they try to just talk up their loved one and how great they were? Like, it'll be interesting to see how the campaigning is going to work if we have, because I would say it's safe to say that the only way that it would end up with there, we don't see at least one loved one stumping for their loved one would be if the singles, if it was Natalie, Alec, and it is nobody else.
Yeah, we're going to have somebody.
We're
on
guaranteed a loved one in the final, unless it's the final two.
It's the final two,
and it's
true.
And it's Natalie and Alec.
People were poised over the comments section, ready to type.
Yes.
What if it's the final two?
What if it's the final two?
Headed it off.
Yes, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it'll. I know, or even back at Ponderosa, like, do you have the people kind of arguing there as well? I have a feeling we're probably not going to see any of it televised in the actual final tribal council if you know, John and Josh start sniping at each other on the jury or when they ask their questions, even though their loved ones are the ones that are actually competing for the prize at the end. And we're probably not going to see any of that, unless it makes good TV. I don't know. We'll it all depends, I think, if it makes good TV.
Okay. Let's take a question from our good buddy, Daniel Ladiano. And he's very confused about what's going on, Kurt.
Hello, Rob and Kurt.
Hello.
Can someone please tell me what happened last night? I mean, jeez, this was probably the most shocking boot since Ozzy from Micronesia. But anyway, it seems to me that Reed is doing okay for now, but I have two questions about that. One, why do you think that Alec, Keith, and Wes voted against him? And two, do you think there's any chance that those three, Reed, and now the angry Natalie, will be able to form a Final Five alliance? Tell me what you think, and of course, you take care.
Take care. Take care, Daniel. All right. So what do you think Reed is going to do? Do you think that Reed sticks with the couples group, or do you think he goes back to the Keith, Wes, Alec, and potentially Natalie group?
You know, at first, again, I until I realized today that Reed had voted for Jeremy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing, and plus add that to the fact that Alec, Wes, and Keith voted for Reed, I think there's a good chance that he could end up working with the two pairs of Jacqueline, John, Missy, and Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
What I see potentially happening is Natalie lost her partner in the game, Jeremy. Maybe she potentially picks up Reed as a partner. And does that become a new power couple as well? Would they potentially be able to work together?
Hmm.
But I think the reason that those three voted against Reed was it seemed like Keith picked up on the fact that they knew he had an idol. They were potentially going to split the votes. And again, we've seen it several times before in prior seasons. If you know that you're going to be one of the people who's having votes split against them, and then you turn on the person who's sharing that fate with you, you might be able to swing the votes in their favor and end up actually getting them out. So I think he suspected they might split the votes between him and Reed, and that by dumping votes on Reed, he didn't have to play his idol.
See, I see it as I think that Josh was the glue. I know that Reed voted with those guys in the week before, but I think that Reed doesn't really have ties to Keith. If he did, they were probably lost when he went through Keith's bag and told everybody that Keith had the idol. I'm not sure if Keith knows. Keith seemed to know in the episode he's telling Wesley that, hey, everybody's talking about they went through my bag. Does he know that it was Reed, and did that piss them off against Reed? Did those guys all start to scramble and go every man for themselves? And so did they get pissed off at Reed? Alec, I'm not sure if he has any connection to Reed other than that Josh was in an alliance with Alec and then they ended up working together. And then Wes is the same thing. You know, those guys were allies with Josh and now Josh is gone. And it seems like Reed is trying to work with the Baylor Missy group more so than he's trying to work with those guys. So do those guys feel like, is Reed a rat? Did he turn his back on those people? And are they genuinely upset with Reed? And will Reed stick with the group of four for a while? Do you think, what's in his best interest? Is it in his best interest to flip back, or is it in his best interest to stick with the couples? I think, well, here, you tell me what you think, and then I don't want to poison your opinion.
I'm confused. No, there is a lot going on. There's a lot to consider. Guys, I guess if you play it out, you know, it's weird because you always talk about how at 9 is the time to swing your vote, and at 7 is the time to swing your vote or to make a move. It's hard when everybody's a couple because then, like, if
and this was 10,
yeah, and this was at 10, because I'm thinking ahead to, for instance, if Reed sticks with the two couples and gets down to say a final 5. Then, you know, then he can potentially make himself useful. But if you're in a situation where, you know, prior to that, I just don't know. I'm thinking he's bought some loyalty with and potentially taken Jeremy's position by voting him out. I personally think he should try to stick with John, Jacqueline, Baylor, and Missy. But I'm a little biased because I'm also a John fan. So,
yeah. Okay. So why are you a big John fan?
I went to Michigan State, and that's where he is.
You're a homer.
Yes.
You're a homer for John and Jacqueline. Are you a big Jacqueline fan also?
She went to University of Michigan, so that's the rival school, so not as much.
Not as much. Has he been doing your alma mater proud?
You know, Dan Geesling also went to Michigan State.
Yes.
So if I had to, you know...
Dan Geesling's protege.
Yeah, I would... I would say he's not doing bad so far. We have to wait to see how things play out for a couple weeks.
Okay. So I agree. I think that he should stick with the couples. I mean, I think that the best case scenario for Reed is to get to the final three with a couple.
Right. Or I mean, the other option is like if he sticks with Baylor, Missy, John, and Jacqueline, that's two couples that he's with. If he and Natalie flip to be with Keith and Wes and Alec, that's one couple and three singles. I think there might be more room for him to maneuver there, to break things up. Plus, if you're looking at who's a threat to sit next to at the end, he might actually fare better with the the Keith group.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing to think about because
he's in a sticky situation.
He would be in a sticky situation, but also a potentially a good situation if he could get down to the final five with the two couples. You know, if he gets to the final three with either of the couples, he wins the game,
right?
Hands down.
I mean, if that was the plan, that's kind of genius in that by voting out Jeremy, you kick Natalie out of favor with the group. You kind of take over the potential swing vote at five, and it's five against four.
Yeah, but if the two couples are smart, and I'm not sure about this, if they are or not, they all need to get together and vote Reed out at five. Because they need to realize that if he gets to the final three, he'll win the game. And it's almost like the optimal situation in this final three, I think, is to be the lone single in the finals with a couple. So I almost feel like we talked about this a little bit last week. Well, you see people jockeying for vote me out, but then. You know, then it would be like, let's say you got to the final five. It's almost like if John, so you want to stay in the game, but you don't want to have both of your people stay in the game. It's sort of like you want to control it at final five, but then maybe to have, you know, somebody out at, you almost want your person to go out at final four.
Yeah.
From your couple.
I just don't think that Missy Baylor, you almost have to say them as a foursome, Missy Baylor, John, and Jacqueline. I don't think any of them are necessarily savvy enough to see that. I think what they'll first see is, gosh, if we get down to a final four and it's 2-on-2, there's a very good chance that my loved one will be the one that goes home because we're not going to split our votes. So we need to be the couple that curries to that fifth player and gets them to join with us.
Whether that's a trap.
But it is a trap. I just don't think they're going to see me. I think they're going to be blinded by the thought of one of their own going home. And I don't think they're going to see the logic of, well, I can go home as long as my loved one is in the finals and they win. It still helps me out. It's a little bit more true with John and Jacqueline than it is with Missy and Baylor necessarily, but in terms of the relationship. But otherwise, they are finding themselves in a sticky situation. Feels like I stepped in gum,
got honey. There's a lot to talk through. It really is a very sticky situation. That would be fun to watch.
I feel like I'm cheating on Utopia by listening to this song instead. I'm sorry.
All right, let's take some more voicemail questions. Are you hanging in there? You have stamina?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Let's go to our next voicemail question. Let's go down to, let's go to visit Long Island. Let's go, I'm going to visit home. Okay, and let's check in with Jordan and hear what he has to say.
Hey, Robin Kirk, it's Jordan from Long Island. Do you think John and Jacqueline are in trouble now because they have a swing vote? The same thing happened with Christy in that she was voted out at the final six because she was a swing vote. I see possibly some trouble for John and Jacqueline because, you know, they have the power. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Do you think that John and Jacqueline could potentially get voted off because they're the swing votes now and people will see them as the swing votes? And in Survivor, you know, you think you're the swing vote, you think you have the power, and everybody comes together and votes you out. Do you think that next week's episode we'll see either John or Jacqueline go home?
I think there's a chance it could happen. It really depends on what Reed and Natalie decide to do. I think if one of them does go home, though, it's not. I don't think they're swing votes anymore. I mean, like, you can have the one way you can have power is by being the swing vote. Another one is by kind of helping call the shots in your little alliance. And I think you even said it well on the Know-It-Alls last night. Is that John kind of moved himself up from being a foot soldier in one of a couple potential alliances, and by taking out both Josh and Jeremy, he is now almost the leader of this alliance. So I don't think they're in a swing vote position anymore. They're firmly planted with Missy and Baylor, and I think potentially Reed is the swing vote.
I'm trying to think if they could swing anything. I wonder if they could maybe swing to something with Alec. I think he might be their other ally, the other person that's... Alec, I think, still wants to work with John. That we saw Jacqueline is mad at Keith and Wes, not Alec.
Yeah, I think
I feel like if they ever wanted to, I feel like those two could turn it around on Missy and Baylor. I feel like Missy and Baylor have very few allies left in the game. I think Missy and Baylor painted themselves into a corner with this move. Like, I felt like that they always had Natalie and Jeremy. Like, I feel like for Missy and Baylor, this was a really bad decision, because I felt like at Final Six, Jeremy and Natalie were always more loyal to Baylor and Missy. So if they got it down to the six, then they were going to vote off Jacqueline and John next. Yeah. And then the final four would have been Missy, Baylor, Jeremy, and Natalie.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough for them to bring in either Keith or Wes. It did seem like at camp, Alec was the instigator of all of the rudeness to women discussions.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the extent to which Jeff probed into things,
yeah,
at Tribal Council, it was largely Keith, and by association, Wes, that was not helping matters.
John and Jacqueline like Alec.
Yeah.
So, and there's very few people in the game that are more loyal to Missy and Baylor than other people.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a shame that that people can't put previous tribal councils behind them, because mm-hmm. we've still got three couples in the game. Like, but there's, I don't really see there being any possible way that Keith and Wes, John and Jacqueline, and Missy and Baylor will band together as a group of all the remaining couples and get rid of Alec and Reed and Natalie.
No.
No way that's happening.
Not happening.
So it's
not going to happen.
No, that would be fan fiction.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I guess Alec, but I don't know. It just the fact that Reed knew to vote Jeremy makes me think that there was some conversation that took place that we didn't see, that was kind of maybe an agreement of what to do moving forward.
Okay, let's take a question from Brian. Wants to talk about Missy and Baylor.
Hi, Rob and Kurt. It's Brandon from Arkansas. And I was just wondering, out of the Missy, Baylor, John, and Jacqueline alliance, who do you think is in the driver's seat? Who do you think is in the passenger seat? And who do you think is in the back seat? Thanks for my call. Bye.
Okay. I apologize to Brennan, not Brian. I couldn't read my own handwriting. All right. So in this Missy Baylor alliance, okay, they're all in the car together. Somebody is in the driver's seat. Somebody is in the passenger seat. And somebody is in the back seat. Kurt, what?
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Who's driving?
It seems like John's driving. Jacqueline is most definitely not driving. It seemed like she was maybe behind the wheel last week, but then they swapped off. She was getting tired.
Okay, so John is driving.
John is driving. In terms of who is in,
Jacqueline's in the passenger seat.
Who's riding shotgun? I'd have to say by association with John, I'd have to say Jacqueline's in the passenger seat.
And then Missy and Baylor are in the back seat.
I think so.
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Oh my God.
Maybe she's a backseat driver.
Backseat driver, Missy.
Love you, bae.
Yeah. She's not loving this.
No, it's, the only way I would change that up is, did Missy and Baylor make this switch and see it as a good thing to do along with John Jacqueline because of a conversation with Reed? Like, if Missy and Baylor think they have Reed in their back pocket, then unknowingly, Missy and Baylor are driving.
Okay. Unknowingly. Okay. So maybe Missy is back to telling everybody.
Get in the back seat and let me drive.
Yes. Because if John is driving, you know, it's like hey guys, can we just stop at this drive through real quick?
Yeah.
I'm so hungry.
Trail mix.
I haven't eaten since yesterday. I'm so hungry. I haven't had a meal since 2 o'clock. Okay. He's a very hungry guy.
Yes.
Hungry. How's the food at University of Michigan?
Michigan State. Oh gosh, Rob.
Sorry.
No, really good. It's actually one of the highest rated university kitchens in the United States.
Okay. All right. Not too many patrons in the kitchen. Too many cooks.
Just the right amount.
Oh, I would kill for too many cooks.
Yes, we got our Wisconsin cheesy chicken in there, so we're good.
Okay. All right. Let's take another question. And let's go to this one, and let's go to for it is our Clark cast. Let's go to Clarksville, Tennessee.
What's up, Rob and Kurt? It's Brent from Tennessee. I just wanted to know which one of the current cast members of San Juan del Sur do you guys think should totally go to yoga with Vidas?
All right,
Which one of the cast members should go ahead and totally go to yoga with Vetus?
And these girls I got into high school with were like, Vetus, you should totally come to yoga. And I was like, no way am I going to yoga. I finally said it.
All right, Vetus isn't going.
But yeah, if he does go, which of the girls should go with him? I think just based on the challenge today, Baylor.
Baylor should totally go to yoga.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, is it people who would do well there and would kind of excel and wouldn't need a lot of guidance? I think Baylor, she had good balance. In terms of people who are having trouble and might need some guidance on that front, think of the people still left in the game. It's not going to be Jacqueline or... you know what? If it's about calming, maybe Natalie.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm loving Natalie, the remaining 20, but still just historically, I'm interested to see her reaction when she gets back to camp on next week's episode.
Yeah. Cause I wish that there was better audio for, what the F Missy. It's sort of like, it's very low and it's also like kind of dropped out, but, I love that.
Maybe that can get picked up sometime in the future.
Yeah. What the F happened, Missy? Okay. Let's go to our good buddy, Albert in Tustin.
Hey guys, this is Albert calling in from Tustin, California. And I have a question about immunity idols. When was the last time an immunity idol was actually played and have it be actually successful? Because I remember this season, no immunity idols have been played. Last season, I think Tony played one and LJ played one, but it didn't matter because the votes never went their way. When was the last time somebody was actually saved by the use of an idol? Thank you.
Last time somebody was saved by the use of the idol. Okay, this is the one where the people are hovering over the keyboard waiting for us to get it wrong.
Right.
But I believe I have two guesses. Well, what happened in Survivor Karamoan when the three amigos all played their immunity idols?
Right. And I think that was more.
But Eric also switched his vote.
Yes. The thing is, they. Did they end up getting votes cast against them that weren't counted, or did they threaten? But yeah, they did. People still voted for them.
Yes.
So I mean, it's hard to remember because they didn't play them in a hidden manner. They flaunted the idols prior to the vote and said, "Here's what we're going to do."
Yeah.
But even having done that, people still voted for them. The votes were nullified, and Philip ended up going home.
So I believe in my real answer is going to be Penner in Survivor Philippines.
Okay, I'm trying to remember.
I believe it was the first vote after the merge, and then RC got voted out.
Oh, okay.
I think so. That's my answer. We'll see if that is ultimately the right answer. Okay. Let's do one last voicemail question. Okay, and let's go to another good friend of the show. Let's go to Antonio Mazzaro. Here's what Antonio has to say.
What's up? Rob Sesternino, the showmaker, and Kurt Clark, the show killer. Wah, wah. This is Antonio from Melbourne, Kentucky, and my question concerns the goings-on at last night's council. I think the general perception from know-it-alls is that 4 into 10 is out. However, if you'll notice, Reed actually voted for Jeremy. Voted with the couples, in fact, forming a de facto battlefield alliance of 5 with Reed and the couples. My question for you guys is that a better deal for the couples, that 5-person alliance, than the 6-person alliance that they had where there were 2 votes within their alliance that they couldn't necessarily count on? So in this scenario, Reed is actually incentivized to stay with the couples because that's the best way for him to find himself in a position of the ideal final tribal, sitting next to a couple. I'm wondering if you guys could talk it out and discuss what you think will progress, would have progressed with the 6-person alliance, would it just have been a straight begonging? How would that have broken down into the final 5 and final 4 versus what's happening with Reed now, where that seems to be a clear final 5, and maybe the couples can work together to eliminate Reed at the final 4 and ensure themselves in the final 4 and not be picked off before that because Reed is incentivized to stick with them. Definitely curious to what you guys think about this. Thank you very much. Peace out, fellas.
Okay. We've talked through a lot of the different perspectives elements on that. But the thing that I feel like we haven't really talked through is in a game with, you know, with 10 people going into 9 people, are you better off with an alliance of 6 or are you better off with an alliance of 5?
It's
assuming we can call the 2 couples plus Reed an alliance of 5.
Right.
Are you better off with a smaller alliance or are you better off with a bigger alliance?
I think we learned from this past season of Big Brother that as long as you have half of the tribe in your alliance, you're good.
Yeah.
They have like 15 people in that alliance. Well, I don't know. The thing is that every alliance of 6 becomes an alliance of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, let's look at the alliance of 6. And we talked about how it seemed like a certainty with that alliance of 6 that John and Jacqueline were going to get picked off at 6. But really what ended up happening is let's say they send John home at 6, then you have Jacqueline left over and you're really left with a very similar situation to if you have, you know, Jeremy and Natalie, Missy and Baylor, and then Jacqueline. She kind of becomes that potential deciding vote between the two pairs if they want to turn on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the same position that it's in now. So I, for me, it's a little like 6 of one, half dozen of the other. I think the situation with the 6 is going to become exactly the same situation we see now with the 2 couples and Reed.
I would argue you're better off if it's a tight 5. That's fine. But we can't assume that it's such a tight 5. I feel like as far as picking those numbers off, I think you want to get rid of a couple more numbers if you're in that 6. I don't have a problem necessarily with what John did. I just think that he probably would have been better off doing this in, you know, a week or two. You still want to get the jump on Jeremy, but you didn't get the sense that Jeremy was going to do this imminently. Maybe if you wait, is it too late? Is it better to make the move too early than too late? Of course, but I just still think that you increase the chance that you're going to be going out by doing this sooner as opposed to, you know, hanging in there and what's going to buy you more time in the game.
Right. It just seems to me, though, that with 3 couples, you're going to constantly, if you're a smart player, be questioning and asking yourself, where do you stand in that ranking of couples? Are you going to be the first couple out? Are you actually with another couple in the final 4.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you have an alliance of 5 where it's you, another couple, and kind of a fifth person straggler, you may be a bit more confident that you and the other couple are going to work together because you've gotten there and you have some shared understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you maybe feel less likely to scramble if you're in that 5 person situation. I just don't know.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
There's a lot to see how this is going to go. All right. So, Kurt, are you ready? Let's talk about some of the Survivor news, Survivor social media. Some big news this week from Kim Spradlin, a.k.a. Kim Spradlin.
Yep.
Expecting baby number 2.
Whoa. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Congratulations to Kim.
Yeah.
What a hot streak!
Yeah, takes her out of the running for being cast yet another summer.
Yes, yes. Okay. Some Survivor birthdays coming up this week. Also on November 22nd, 2 Survivor birthdays on the way.
Nope.
One of the survivors who also played in Nicaragua, Sash.
Okay.
Celebrated a birthday and also has the same birthday as Colton.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah. So, 2 Survivor birthdays coming up this weekend. All right, let's get into some of the tweets from social media. Of course, let's go ahead and let's go to Eliza. Okay,
of course.
Eliza is not a fan of your boy John.
Okay, I don't see that being a match.
Yes, she says, I haven't really considered the future consequences of my actions. She quotes John. She says, no S word, John. Hashtag not the brightest bulb. Hashtag survivor. Why now? Why is she anti John? It's usually you can connect the dots with Eliza. Why is she anti John and Jacqueline?
Is she anti Jacqueline?
Maybe she's just anti John.
I don't. I think she. Gosh, it's going to get me into all sorts of hot water trying to psychoanalyze Eliza on this one. I know it seems like this isn't, that John isn't of the persona that she would typically click with. That's just my initial impression. I'm not surprised at her assessment of John. And it did seem like a lot of random moves. And we know that Eliza does not like random, not thought out moves.
Yeah. All right. So then Eliza also tweeted again. This is a painful scene. John is hashtag the worst liar ever. But she didn't use it. Like, she actually wrote out the word hashtag and then put the worst liar, what liar ever, all together, hashtag survivor. And then Sophie got in and said, OMG, learn how to hashtag or get out. And then Eliza wrote back, you weren't here to hear be behind the scenes, but saying hashtag was a thing. Sorry you missed out. Hashtag sorry, I'm not sorry. I wish I would have asked Sophie about this tension between her and Eliza now.
I got to stick with Team Clark on this one. Sorry.
And then Eliza tweeted again, didn't Jeremy learn from Brenda? Don't give things away to people who are going to turn on you and backstab you. Hashtag Dawn is the worst. Oh my God, Eliza is still not over Survivor Karam Owen.
Is this a case of kind of, you know, selectively sampling? Like, are we only remembering the bad times where somebody gave someone something to someone?
Yes.
And I'm sure if we went back, no, we could find... No?
No, okay. Nothing could ever happen.
Okay. Never mind.
Well, I'm sure at some point there was something good that happened as somebody who's...
I mean, even like the flip side of it, like, you know, I remember when Jane found the fish and then she cooked it and ate it herself and didn't share it with anybody and she ended up going home.
Yes.
So, hey, you be selfish, you go home.
Yes. You go home for anything.
You go for anything.
You go home for anything. Russell Hance is not happy with this season.
Really?
Yes. Russell Hance tweeted, anybody that's trying to justify tonight's movie is just as stupid as the cast. He was a threat, in quotes. Hashtag that's BS. He did write movie.
Okay, I had to self-edit in my mind there to hear that correctly.
Yeah, so I will read a typo if it's in the tweet. Russell also said, the only thing is, if you make a stupid move with stupid people, it might not be so stupid after all. Hashtag what?
Is that the RH rules? Because that actually sounds good. If you make a stupid move, if you're with stupid people, yeah, you might not actually have hurt your game that much. That's actually good.
I think those might actually be the FG rules of stupid is as stupid does. If stupid is as stupid does, then you're smart. The smartest move of all time. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Jervis Peterson, okay, at Say Jerv.
Say Jerv.
All right. This is a controversial tweet.
Okay.
All right. Very, very controversial tweet indeed. Okay. So Jervis Peterson tweeted, I'm not going to lie, I'm totally crushing in Baylor. What? Oh my God. Tabulator, can you crunch the half your age plus seven rules on this?
How old is our Jerv?
I don't know. Jervis.
I can work it backwards. If Jervis is greater than let's say Baylor's 20, right?
Yes.
So subtract seven from that, 13.
Jervis,
26. Okay. Yeah, if he's older than 26, then he should not be going after Baylor.
Jervis is born November 2nd, just celebrated birthday, 1969.
Ooh, so he is 46-ish? I mean, this will round into that. Yeah, if Baylor is not quite 30, so that is the half plus seven rule is being violated.
Jervis, no, this is not, stay away, this is a stay away situation. Stay away situation.
Okay, the song's growing on me. Okay.
Yes, because, yeah, not for anything, that Survivor is 15 years old.
Yes.
And in the first season of Survivor, I believe Jervis had his fourth kid.
Yeah.
So Jervis has kids that are very close to Baylor's age.
Yeah.
That's a stay away situation.
Yes.
That is a sticky situation indeed. Okay. Also, Jervis said, damn, Jeremy, two Collins. I was rooting for you. Oh, well, now I can focus on Baylor. I just threw you to the curb real quick. Ha 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 ha. Jervis, stay away.
How many ha's was that?
It was a lot. It was three ha's. Also, he says, girls plus mud equals winning.
I agree. No. Because when I saw the mud pit in the reward challenge, it reminded me. We saw that it was one of the early immunity challenges season. I was like, yeah, you know, mud plus Julie was very agreeable. Mud plus, you know, pretty much any of the challenges is something that's going to be fun to watch.
Yes. All right. Spencer, your boy Spencer Bledsoe tweeted, next time on Survivor, we're out of people who can speak. Sorry, guys, no show. And how about Uncle Cliffy getting in on the action? Uncle Cliffy 30 says, rewards don't come easy on Survivor. You can't give them away. Damn.
Yeah, it's. I still can't believe they did that. <It's> just,
you were surprised that they did that.
I think maybe I was just hungry while I was watching it. I was like, really?
Yes. John Mish would not be giving away a reward, right?
No. No. So he'd be Jacqueline gives away the reward and John is not going to follow suit.
Yes. He would not give it away to Jacqueline even.
No.
All right, Kurt. So Lisey was really into last night's Survivor.
Great.
She was very interested. Now Lisey had a vine. I don't know if it's going to play on audio, but let me just play it for you. This is what Lisey was blogging on Vine. I'm not sure what the audio necessarily means. But Lisey was very interested into, she's filming the TV and is filming a lot of close-ups of at Jeremy to Collins from the waist down. So,
okay, I just want to make sure that I was being
a lot of meat.
Yeah. Lisey is, we know where Lisey's head is at. She tweets, OMG, still can't get over that big wink, wink, # Survivor Comedy Hour. Oh my God. Lisey, she's got a one track mind. Yes. So there you go. That's what Lisey, also a meat collector.
I'm a meat collector.
Yeah. Okay, let's check out a couple of other tweets from the world of Rob as a podcast. Okay. This is from Haymaker Hattie, our own Jessica Lee. She says, it's a little vindicating that all along I've been rooting for the twinnies because of Amazing Race, and one of them is actually doing great. That might have been tweeted right before the what the F happened, Missy.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Jess also was impressed with Keith's comeback at Tribal Council of, I talk to your mom all the time. Best comeback ever. Yeah. Haley Strong at H Strong. Jeff Probst, I didn't pull this clip, but mentioned that the sandwiches talked about pastrami, which she said was the perfect reward for a meat collector. I don't know if he has that.
I'm a meat collector.
Right? Did you think that was odd that Jeff just randomly name checked pastrami from the sandwiches?
No, I think it's a great sandwich.
Yes.
It's up there in terms of the quality sandwich meats.
All right. Ari Ferrari, he tweeted, with Josh and Jeremy gone, I'm hoping the host of Utopia becomes the narrator for the remaining of the season.
No.
All right. Let's see. Zach Brooks, big sandwich fan. He tweeted, lesson learned during tonight's Survivor, never give up sandwiches.
No, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's no.
All right, Kurt. And there's your Survivor social media.
Wonderful.
All right. Kurt, thank you so much for coming on.
No, my pleasure.
Yes.
Always a fun time.
Always a fun time. Anything else that we didn't get to cover?
No, I think we covered all the big things. I'm looking forward to, like, what's going to happen.
I'm a meat collector.
Yes.
Just looking forward to see what happens next week. I mean, the fallout is always fun after the big blindside.
Prediction, who's the next boot?
I'm going to say Natalie.
Natalie.
Yeah.
Okay. prediction. Who is the winner of the season?
Wow. I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. Baylor.
Wow. A winning situation. And she won't be able to get rid of Jervis. He's going to be texting 24/7.
There you go.
Oh, my God. So hard to come up with a winner right now.
It is. It's yeah, because you want... It's like, I want to wait till the end of next week, but at the same time, that's like, you should be able at any time say, here's what I think's going to happen. It'll change next week, I'm sure.
While my brain says, like, that's... Or my heart says Baylor as a winner is laughable, like, I was like, then who? You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's, we got rid of Josh and Jay. Like, it's the two people who everybody has been arguing are getting a winner's edit are out of the game now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now people are like, well, Reed's kind of getting a winner's edit. I'm like, okay, then Reed's going to go next.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea now.
And while John is, like, I think he made, this was too early to make the move that he made. He does have the idol. Like, I don't think he's out of the mix. You know, if I had to like hedge my bets, John or Jacqueline, I'd say I think Jacqueline has a better chance to win.
I did think it was interesting, again, if you look at the editing, that they could have just served up, you know, John making this decision based on the conversation that Jeremy had with him. But they did open up the episode with him saying, I feel bad about the dishonesty. I feel bad about how this had went down. I'm second guessing myself on my decision that I made last week. And so the fact that the episode opened with that makes it almost seem like they tried to frame this decision as him following his conscience, which is a good thing. And they didn't need to put that in.
Can a nail win the game?
Jeez. I don't think at the end of this, we'll be saying hashtag nailed it.
Nailed it. That'd be a good hashtag. All right. Well, Kurt, thank you so much. Follow Kurt Clark on Twitter. He's at Kurt Clark. I'm still impressed you got that. I'm still impressed.
2007.
Yes. That you didn't have to go with
everyone still spells it with a K and they end up tweeting somebody who isn't me. So
like you didn't have to go with like CU Clark or something like that. Or
Underscore Kurt Clark.
Yeah. Underscore. Very, very good. Very good. Great job on that. Also great job on the rehap ups, on the post show recaps. Just get the Rob as a Podcast app. Go to robaswebsite.com/app. All the Kurt Clark you can handle.
Almost too much.
All right. And then Kurt, I know you're going to start getting ready for Miss Survivor and Mr. Survivor.
Yeah. And the RHAP fan favorite of the season, too.
Oh, fan favorite of the season.
Gotta get that going.
Oh, my God. That's going to be wide open voting as well.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. So, Kurt, thank you so much. And what I'm going to do is I'll pause the podcast here for a second to walk Kurt Clark out and then come back with my final thoughts. All right, everybody, I'm back. There you have it. That was Kurt Clark, the tabulator here on Rob Has a Podcast. Very fun to get to hang out with Kurt for a little bit. So happy that you made it to the end of this podcast. Such a fun and exhausting Thursday every single week, but coming to the end of another very, very long Thursday show at the end of a Survivor week. Of course, I'll be back on Friday night with Jessica Leese to recap the next episode of The Amazing Race, which is back after a 1 week hiatus. That's going to be on Friday night at 9:15 p.m. Eastern. Also, working on a couple of fun shows for you guys early next week. Just make sure you stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or make sure you have the Rob Has a Podcast app from the App Store on iTunes. Go to robhasawebsite.com/app. We've got our next patron cast coming up on Monday. If you don't know what that is the once a month call-in show that I do with the patrons that they are allowed to. I give out the number, people call in, and they basically ask me anything that they want on the phone, kind of like a radio show. So that's always very, very fun. My monthly patron cast is this upcoming Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific for all the patrons. That's going to be on Monday the 24th. We're also going to be updating the patron cast password this weekend, so make sure you're on the lookout for that. Make sure you have the most updated password to get in there. And thanks to all the new patrons again that come on this week. If you want to find out more about how to become a patron and how to get in for the patron cast this upcoming Monday, go to robiswebsite.com/patron. All right, I didn't get a hashtag with Kurt. I forgot to do it. So let's go ahead and let's use hashtag Medivac Sophie. That was very scary when Sophie, I didn't know if she was going to have to stop or go to the hospital or what. It was just like out of nowhere. Her whole contact lens started to flare up and it went behind her eye. It was very, very, very disconcerting. So I hope Sophie is feeling better on Friday and was able to see at her intramural soccer game. Doesn't have to wear an eye patch like the governor or anything like that. And speaking of the governor, don't forget Sunday night, I'll be back with Josh Wiggler to recap The Walking Dead again this upcoming Sunday. That's going to be at 10:15 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to recap with Rich Tackenberg this upcoming Saturday Night Live with Cameron Diaz. Don't forget that with Josh Wiggler, we're talking about Sons of Anarchy. We've got the Seinfeld recap on post-show recap. So basically, I'm just going to sit in this room and talk until they take me away. And that's pretty much how it's going to go. So as long as you guys keep listening, I really, really appreciate that. And I can keep just sitting here and talking about nonsense. So thanks so much to you guys. Can't wait to see what you guys have to say in the comments. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.